And a very warm welcome to you from the beautiful Gold House in Kentucky. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and it's a pleasure to be bringing you this coverage of ACB's Convention 2000, and it's the 39th annual convention. This evening, let's take a look at what's on the agenda. Well, we have our pre-session entertainment, which is currently on, and we'll let you hear some of that shortly from Barbara Henning. She's playing violin, and we also have Imogen Bradley playing piano. That will last until about 8 o'clock this evening, and then we will have the opening of the convention with the singing of the Star Spangled Banner. That'll be sung by Bradley Manning. The meeting will be convened by Paul Edwards, the president of the American Council of the Blind of Miami, Florida. There'll be the recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance. The invocation will come from the Reverend James Clifford, and he's a graduate of the Kentucky School for the Blind, which is, of course, in the vicinity here in Louisville, and there have been tours taking place, or will be, of the Kentucky School for the Blind, so it's appropriate that he perform that function this evening. There'll be a singing of My Old Kentucky Home. Bradley Mann will do that. The welcome from Eugene Willis, the president of the Kentucky Council of the Blind, and also we'll hear from Russ Maple, the commissioner, the Jefferson County Fiscal Court Commissioner of Louisville, Kentucky. The agenda of ACB, well, we've got the official report of the president, Paul Edwards, and that will be no doubt interesting as Paul reviews what has taken place over the last year and looks to the future of ACB. There'll be the singing of the ACB song, the presentation of ACB Board of Publications Awards. Kim Charlson, who is the chair of the Board of Publications from Watertown, Massachusetts, will do that. An interesting presentation promises to be today and tomorrow from Dr. Frederick K. Schroeder, the Commissioner of Rehabilitation. He'll be looking at rehabilitation perspectives, and he's, of course, in Washington, D.C. There's the President of Life Membership Awards from James Olson, and a number of other things as well, including the roll call of states, of course. So that's
ladies
all coming up.
We have to assist with listening devices again this year. As you face the stage, they're on the left-hand side at the second entrance. It's a little different. That center aisle of this large room. If you're at the center aisle and you're facing the stage, walk to your left.
Let's take you to the convention feed now.
Up toward the stage, and you'll find our area where the assisted listening devices are. And now for more of our entertainment. Isn't this wonderful? Thank you.
listening to live coverage of the American Council of the Blinds Convention, and we're listening to entertainments taking place at the moment in advance of the official start of proceedings, which will occur in about half hour at 8 o'clock. So we hope you're enjoying the entertainment and the coverage of the convention. A reminder that for the rest of the week, we will be here from around 8 in the morning Eastern Time till midday. That's 8 in the morning Eastern Time, 5 Pacific till midday. So make sure you join us for our complete convention coverage.
Come to the soundboard. Bryn, if you're in this room, please come to the soundboard. Thank you. this room, please come to the soundboard. Bryn?
Stream, and we're broadcasting live from the Gold House in Louisville, Kentucky. We're at about 8 o'clock. We're going to hear the opening ceremonies for Convention 2000, the 39th annual convention of the American Council of the Blind. President Paul Edwards will be giving his opening address, his report on ACB activities for the past 12 months, and also looking ahead to what ACB might be doing in the next 12. This is, of course, President Edwards' second to last report as president of ACB. Due to the fact that there are term limits in the organization, he will step down, not seek re-election next year. We'll also hear from Dr. Frederick K. Schroeder, the Commissioner of Rehabilitation from Washington, D.C., and he'll be talking to us about rehabilitation today and tomorrow, giving us a perspective on that. So there promises to be a number of interesting items to look forward to in the next little while. Proceedings should go for around about an hour and a half, and normally the ACB convention proceedings take place at 8 a.m. Eastern to midday, and that will occur Monday right through to Saturday of this week. And now we return you to the entertainment that is bringing the crowds, the very large crowds, to the beautifully large ballroom in this wonderful hotel. Thank you.
John Horst. John Horst, if you're in the room, could you come to the soundboard, please? John Horst. Thank you.
Listening to ACB Radio Mainstream's coverage of the convention, the 39th annual convention of the American Council of the Blind, taking place in Louisville, Kentucky. Hope you stay with us for the rest of the evening. Official convention proceedings start in just a few minutes' time, and approximately 14 minutes' time, there have been other events taking place at the Gold House here in Louisville, Kentucky. The hotel has gradually been filling up. The first enthusiastic guests really started arriving on around about Wednesday, and on Thursday and Friday, even more came. Friday saw the beginning of some of the pre-convention activities, including the SoundForge training seminar that was held for prospective broadcasters on ACB Radio. There were some great students who participated in that, and hopefully that will mean that there is even more ACB Radio programming to look forward to in the not-too-distant future. The Board of Directors of the American Council of the Blind held its pre-convention meeting yesterday, in which a number of interesting issues were discussed. Officers and staff gave reports on activities, and there was also a presentation on looking at the constitutional justification for the Americans with Disabilities Act. We hope to be able to bring you some of that in future programs on ACB Radio, particularly as part of our Focal Point program, which looks at advocacy. There was also a discussion about Freedom Scientific and the ramifications of its acquisition of various technology companies on blind people. Paul Edwards in the Board of Board of Directors meeting yesterday did mention that Blasey Engineering is exhibiting here this year under the Freedom Scientific umbrella. And President Edwards told the group yesterday who were gathered for that meeting that it means that for the first time in 6 years, people will be able to update their lazy note takers, such as the Braille Speak and Braille Light, at convention. There have been other activities. Those who are interested in computer technology attended a very interesting presentation this afternoon from various vendors of adaptive technology who were there as part of the VidPi program, the Visually Impaired Data Processors International Group. There have been many other receptions, meetings. The Resolutions Committee convened last night and were hard at it until 2 o'clock in the morning dealing with resolutions for this convention, which of course will come up throughout the week. So stay tuned for those as they get brought to the floor. Of course, there's keen interest also in who will be the new members of the Board of Directors. And we hope to be able to bring you some interviews with prospective candidates. We are looking at whether we can cover the candidates forum or not, but at this stage that's not clear whether it's going to be technically possible for us to do that. So there is plenty of action taking place here in Louisville. That it's already taken place and there's a lot more to come.
Attention, while we're waiting to get started,
What I'm going to do is to read a series of announcements, and if you don't listen to these announcements, you could get lost. Announcement number one. The room for the resolution committee has changed from Wilson 3E to 1700 West starting tonight. 1700 West is located near Cheyenne, Wyoming. Announcement number two, some people have been told that the Seeing Eye graduate breakfast on Wednesday is limited to 100 people. It is not limited if you are a Seeing Eye graduate. However, tickets must be picked up in registration tomorrow. It's an unlimited Seeing Eye graduate breakfast, and it's limited to everybody else.
Announcement number three.
A quick food station has been added, located to the left of the volunteer table in the East Tower, open from 4:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Actually, they don't serve only quick. There are some other things. Number four. At least I don't know what quicks eat. The ramp to the ballroom stage does not have a banister along the edge or at the top. It has a 2-inch strip along the edge. Persons using the ramp should stay close to the stage. It's too late. They should have told me before. Announcement number five. Guide dog users should be aware that there will be fireworks set off along the river next to the hotel at 10:30 p.m. tonight and Tuesday night. So if you have any desire to thoroughly unsettle your dog, we can give you directions. It's a good thing I'm not running again. There went the GDUI vote. Announcement number six. An accessible an accessible ATM from Debort Company is on display in the ballroom foyer outside the Clements Room. The machine uses only play money. However, if you can persuade others to take it, congratulations. A company representative will be available to demonstrate the ATM Monday and Tuesday from 1 to 5 p.m. So you really should check it out. A second ATM will be on display later in the week, and by second we mean a different make and model. So you'll get an opportunity to compare two. Announcement number seven. Paulette Lester is here from the Des Moines Convention Bureau. She will have a table set up with information about the Des Moines Convention for next year. The table will be located in the ballroom foyer outside the entrance to the exhibit hall Monday and Tuesday afternoons. This is the cool part. She will take hotel reservations. So, we can be certain by the end of Tuesday afternoon that the Des Moines Convention will be as big as the one in Louisville. It's a bad attitude, Kentucky. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 39th Annual Convention of the American Council of the Blind. I think I'll quit while I'm ahead. I'd like to ask everyone to stand, please. I'd like to ask the color guard from the Kentucky Air National Guard to bring forward the flag.
Who's going to cue me? Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing. The flag is essentially just a little bit to the right of center, and let us do the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Ladies and... Go ahead. Ladies and gentlemen... I'd like to take this opportunity of thanking those who provided our pre-session entertainment, Miss Imogene Bradley on the piano, and can't read anymore.
Barbara.
And Barbara Henning on the violin. And I would also like to congratulate the singer of the Star Spangled Banner, who we will hear from again, whose name is Bradley Mann. Now, for our invocation, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Reverend James Clifford, pastor of the Laud Christian Church, and graduate of the Kentucky School for the Blind from Columbia City.
Shall we pray? Our Father, we are so thankful we can gather together, that the freedoms we have allow this privilege of gathering. We pray, Heavenly Father, that through this week and with all of the activities of the week, you will bless this group. Encourage, strengthen, guide, and help in all ways. Prepare and pour out upon them a very special and wonderful blessing. Bind them together in purpose, in fellowship, in love. This we ask in the name of our Savior, Jesus the Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. There is a... Please be seated, ladies and gentlemen. Though I will probably be harassed by some of my fellow Kentuckians, because it may be that they would have liked us to stand for the national anthem of Kentucky. Mr. Mann, we would appreciate it if you would be so kind as to give us the rendition that is forever associated with Kentucky of My Old Kentucky Home.
The sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. 'Tis summer, the people are gay. The corn tops ripe and the meadows in the bloom, while the birds make music all the day. The young folks roll on the little cabin floor, all merry, all happy and bright. By and by hard times come a-knocking at the door. Then my old Kentucky home, good night. Weep no more, my lady, oh, weep no more today. We will sing one song for my old Kentucky home. For my old Kentucky home, far away.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mann. We appreciate that. This is the first time I've ever been able to hear the words. Ladies and gentlemen, sometimes when we put together a convention here at the American Council of the Blind, we find ourselves working with state affiliates who are glad to have us come, but who don't get really into the spirit of things. And sometimes when we're planning conventions of the American Council of the Blind, we find ourselves with a state affiliate who makes our job immensely easier. We dealt, ladies and gentlemen, with the latter kind of state affiliate here in Kentucky. Before I introduce their president to welcome us here, I want to ask all of you to thank everyone from the Kentucky Council of the Blind who made our job in ACB so much easier. And now, to welcome the American Council of the Blind to Kentucky and to introduce another welcome from the Louisville area, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you the ever-dynamic president of the Kentucky Council of the Blind, Mr. Eugene Willis.
Thank you very much. We just about got him converted. He'll be converted before the night's over. Hello, ACB, and how y'all doing? It gives me one of the most honorable times of my life. This is a dream come true to stand on this stage and welcome what I feel is the greatest organization of blind people in the world this day, this universe. And we just want to say, welcome to our old Kentucky home, ACB. Yeah. And it gives me a great honor to introduce a lifetime member of KCB. He was our first treasurer. He still got our money. And he's helped us spend it, but he has stood with us on every issue that concerned us with Jefferson County across this state. You know, we have friends and we have best friends. He is one of our best friends, one of my best friends, and it's an honor for me to have Mr. Russ Maple, 8th District Commissioner of Jefferson County, to come and greet you and make a special presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Eugene. I sincerely appreciate that.
I also wanted to say, Bradley, man, that was the best rendition, I believe, of My Old Kentucky I've ever heard. That sounds like Churchill Downs material to me. Let's give him another hand. My wife asked me this evening, Paul, and she says, well, this is a little unusual on a holiday weekend that an elected official, she likes to call me a politician, would go out to, yeah, what did I call her? False. dear. Anyway, she's, and so I told her, I said, well, I said, actually, I won't be gone too long. My daughter's in town from West Virginia and so forth. But she says, what would cause you to go out on a holiday weekend to any meeting? I said, well, Eugene Willis promised me 2,400 votes. And then I got here, and I asked Eugene, I said, how many people's here? He said, about 2,400 people. I said, how many of them's from Jefferson County? He said, about 100. So anyway, Eugene, I won't tell her that part, okay? It is indeed a pleasure, Paul, to really to be able to officially welcome you and the American Council of the Blind, the national organization, to our community. I have been involved since 1973. I see some of my friends out there, Carla and others, who really got me involved. Eugene is right. I was, I think, their first treasurer. And in all honesty, there wasn't an audit when I went out of office, so there may be one coming soon after tonight. But it was a great pleasure to see this organization grow from what it was then until what it is now, and to know in my heart and in your hearts what it will be and what it can be. I see a few people who I think Eugene was too young at the time, but there's a few here that I remember when we first got involved with some of the causes for the visually impaired, that one of the first things we did, Carla, was, as I recall, was to march on the mayor's office. And we did it in a bus, and then I think Carla or someone came up with the idea, said, well, we need to take the dogs, too. So I still have those pictures of us going in the mayor's office with the dogs. I don't think they knew what hit them. I'm not sure we got our way. That was in 1973. My memory won't go back that far. But I can tell you that it really captured my heart those years. And that's why I have tried to stay available and involved as you want me to be through these years. So, Paul, I would like to sort of, in addition to welcoming you, I would like to give you a little token to take home with you from this community. And if I may read this to you and then present it to you, this is to the American Council of the Blind. It says, be it hereby known that the American Council of the Blind is conducting their convention this week here in Jefferson County, and whereas the American Council of the Blind is a national membership organization formed by blind people to promote the independence, dignity, and advancement of blind and visually impaired individuals. And whereas the Jefferson County Commissioners welcome this convention to Jefferson County and would like to commend its members for continuing to strive to increase the equality of opportunity and quality of life for all blind and visually impaired people. Therefore, be it hereby known that the Jefferson County Commissioners, on behalf of the Jefferson County community, recognize and encourage the efforts of the American Council of the Blind and hereby present to them, through you, Paul, this Community Excellence Award. And it is indeed an honor to do so on behalf of the Jefferson County government.
Thank you very much.
And we're not finished.
I also have a recognition tonight from Governor Patton and also from the Secretary of State, a Kentucky colonelship for you. And
And Eugene said this is all part of the conversion process.
I'd like to just kind of add a little something to this. We have a letter here that Eugene called me to do this back some time ago. And I have a little bit of history here on Kentucky Colonels. And if I may just read it to you, it'll be part of this Kentucky Colonel proclamation tonight. But it says, the highest honor awarded by the Commonwealth of Kentucky is that of Kentucky Colonel. Our colonels are Kentucky's ambassadors of goodwill and fellowship around the world. Commissioners, as Kentucky colonels, are presented for contributions to the community, state, or nation, and for special achievements of all kinds. With your commission as a Kentucky colonel, the governor recognizes your service and accomplishments on behalf of others. A list of Kentucky colonels is a who's who of outstanding men and women around the world. The certificate signed by the governor and secretary of state and bearing the great seal of Kentucky has hung on walls of such distinguished leaders as President Lyndon Johnson, an English Prime Minister Winston Churchill, John Glenn, America's first man in space, was commissioned while orbiting Earth on his historic mission. Other well-known colonels include Carol Channing, Anne Margaret, Tiger Jones, Dwight Yoakam, Muhammad Ali, Jeff Foxworthy, and Whoopi Goldberg. So we wanted to let you know how we appreciate you and the service that you have committed yourself to over the years, a lifetime of commitment, and we'd like to honor you in this small way with this token of our appreciation, a Kentucky colonelship signed by the governor of Kentucky.
Eugene says he told me I'd be converted. I didn't notice anybody saluting. Ladies and gentlemen, I truly am touched by the honor that Kentucky has bestowed on me, and I hope, sir, that you will communicate to the governor the deep appreciation of myself and of the American Council of the Blind of the signal honor that the state of Kentucky has done this organization and myself personally. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Russ Maple. Ought to be a colonel himself. Maybe I could get him appointed now that I'm a colonel. Ladies and gentlemen, we have one final thing that I would very much like to do as part of the welcome. One of the gentlemen who's here is a person who's responsible in some probably larger than small way for the fact that we're able to hold conventions. The manager of the ACBES thrift store here in Louisville, Kentucky, is a gentleman whose name is Gary Ward. And he was kind enough to come to our opening ceremonies tonight, and I'd like to invite him to just say a few words to us. Gary, we really appreciate all that you do.
Thank you, Paul. I'd just like to say hi and welcome everybody to Louisville, and I hope you have a good convention here. If you get a chance, stop in and see our thrift store down on Poplar Level Road, and I hope your week goes well, and you have a good time. Thank you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, as you may know, we're having two tours to our thrift stores. That's the good news. The bad news is they're both sold out. We are trying our best to see what we can do to get some maps so that if you guys want to venture down there on your own, you can certainly do that, and we hope you will. Thrift stores are what keep us going. So, Gary, thanks very much, and we very much appreciate it. Yes?
Maps will be at the information desk in the morning.
Mr. James Olson has just informed me that maps will be at the information desk tomorrow morning.
Thanks very much. And those are drawn by Gary's own hands. Okay. We've come to the stage in the evening where it's time for me to present my annual report, so I hope folks will bear with me. It's getting very difficult to find a way to say all the things I want to and still leave time for any other programming on Sunday night. Not only have I, as your president, been kept more than busy enough, but ACB continues to move ahead with an agenda that includes more and more initiatives on which I can report progress. We also continue to operate in an environment which is becoming more complex and hazardous, and where there are more barriers and opportunities as well that are emerging each day. This year has been notable in so many ways that I must actually choose the items that I will focus on in reporting to you. I want to start by suggesting to you that the single most momentous event to occur in the past year in ACB was made as a decision by the ACB Board of Directors very quietly and without much fanfare in September. At our September board meeting, Chris Gray, Brian Charlson, and myself proposed to our board that we try to see if we could possibly find a way to begin broadcasting on the Internet. By December of last year, ACB Radio was launched. In April of this year, we expanded from a single radio station to three of them. Since then, ACB has been producing 10 hours of new programming every week on our mainstream channel, broadcasting music by blind musicians only 24 hours a day on our cafe channel, and we offer the finest in old-time radio on our Treasures channel. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to suggest that none of this would have been possible had we not been able to employ part-time one of the most capable people I've ever had the pleasure to know, Jonathan Mosen. I would also suggest to you that no single action taken by ACB ever has done more to make us a household word with blind people all over the world than our setting up of ACB Radio. Now, we have some 2,000 discreet listeners every week, and that number is growing all the time. We're broadcasting programming from Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States, and will, within the next few months, launch Spanish language programming. All the programming on ACB Radio is being produced by blind people, for blind people, and in fact, ladies and gentlemen, my words are right now being carried live to anyone listening to mainstream around the world. To those who are listening around the world, we're sorry you're not here in Kentucky. The bourbon's great, but we're glad you're listening. I wish that I could spend my whole report talking about ACB Radio, but there are other things that have occupied us in ACB this year, and not all the news is good. There is growing hostility to the Americans with Disabilities Act, and 10 years after its passage, the Supreme Court has accepted a case which could seriously limit the applicability of this law. More than that, there is a bill in Congress that would seek to say to businesses who have done nothing to remove barriers to access for people with disabilities that they will be protected from complaints for 90 days after someone notices their facility or service is not accessible. They only had a decade to get ready. The American Council of the Blind will continue to affirm that people with disabilities must and will be protected by the civil rights laws that we worked so hard to pass. Every single person in this audience and every other member of the American Council of the Blind and every disabled person in the United States can play a part in ensuring this happens. When your rights are not being recognized, you must file complaints. The Department of Justice believes that many blind people are simply not standing up for what the law requires. If we do not demand that society includes us, we shouldn't be surprised if it doesn't. The American Council of the Blind has continued this year to work with other blindness organizations with mixed success. Last fall, Charlie Crawford and I went to Baltimore and met with other leaders of blindness organizations at the headquarters of the National Federation of the Blind to develop and implement strategies that would safeguard and extend the provision of separate services to people who are blind. While we've worked to see results come out of that initiative, they've been slow to emerge. Nevertheless, along with the National Federation of the Blind, the National Council of State Agencies Serving the Blind, the American Foundation for the Blind, the Association for the Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired, and other organizations, we are continuing to develop consensus on how best the rights of blind people to effective, discrete service delivery can best be protected. What we do know is we will protect those rights. We will continue to work to develop a model commission bill, and we'll also work to develop other appropriate documents that will help all organizations of and for the blind to speak with the same voice on this issue. In December, I participated by teleconference with the leadership of the National Council of State Agencies Serving the Blind and continued to try to get that organization to adopt the 13 principles ACB adopted last year by resolution. While I'm happy to report that some states have accepted them, we still have work to do, and so does every state affiliate, and we must continue to press state agencies to accept the accountability that these principles assure. We must also make certain that we persuade the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind to adopt these principles as standards that they believe ought to apply to services for blind folks as well. This year has seen our pedestrian initiative make huge strides forward, no pun intended. The success of that initiative does not lie with ACB at the national level. Rather, it has depended on the hard work of state and local affiliates and individuals in Michigan, in Ohio, in Florida, and elsewhere. We're beginning to build community support, not just among blind people, but in whole communities, for the idea that people who are blind and others have the right to expect to be able to cross streets safely. We've begun the process of getting language into federal regulations that defines what an accessible pedestrian signal is. And with the assistance of other organizations, have released the second edition of our Pedestrian Safety Handbook. Our Pedestrian Safety Handbook is becoming the textbook for anybody wishing to set up accessible pedestrian signals, and I'd like to congratulate Debbie Grubb and all of those who worked so hard to make it a reality. It would be good if every traffic engineer in the United States could read it. And if we don't have evidence that they are reading it, you might make a presentation to them of a copy of the book in Braille. It's sad that all blind people are not working together to lessen the likelihood that people who are blind will die because they do not have the kind of protection the environment can afford. We must and will oppose the notion that still comes from the National Federation of the Blind that accessible pedestrian signals are unnecessary. We will also continue to work to assure that detectable warnings do not remain reserved by the Access Board so that blind people know when they're about to cross a street with a blended curb.
Pedestrian safety is just one issue where we found ourselves at odds with the NFB this year. We continue to work for the adoption of mandates that will assure that descriptive video will be available to some extent on primetime television. We firmly believe that the Federal Communications Commissioners will issue rules that will assure that this will happen within a month. It is amazing to me that the National Federation of the Blind has chosen to actively oppose these efforts. The motion picture industry has been overjoyed to be able to suggest that blind people don't want descriptive video and that they have the input of a leading organization of blind people to prove it. Sales of described videos, attendance at theaters where described movies are available, and increased use of SAP channels when descriptive video is available for television belie this ludicrous assertion. The American Council of the Blind will continue to argue that descriptive video is an element of the fundamental right of all people who are blind to have the same access to information as others have. We in the American Council of the Blind do not presume to suggest that entertainment and enjoyment are not important. We believe that, in fact, entertainment and enjoyment are important. And, in fact, as well as supporting descriptive video, we this year completed a project that will bear some exciting fruits this week with the Recreation Zone in beginning to, for the first time, create a real initiative with regard to recreation for people who are blind. We're the first consumer organization to do this, and one of the results of that contract that we entered into is a document that should be available on our website by mid-August. That document is a monograph prepared by Oral Miller that will provide accurate, up-to-date information on how best blind people can work with local and state government and school systems to assure that children and adults with disabilities have the right to access recreational programs. So I'm excited about the fact that that document will become available soon. And I'm skipping something. You guys can edit this out. The rest of you in the audience don't have to listen. Anyway, there are three areas where ACB and the NFB have worked well together this year. We cooperated on the issue of Social Security linkage. And I believe it is a measure of our ability to cooperate and of our willingness to do so that one of the speakers at the American Council of the Blind's legislative seminar this year was Chris Cox, who is NFB's legislative representative and the person who works with Capitol Hill in Washington for the NFB. We also found ourselves working together both at the legislative level and within the blindness community to assure that no person who is only blind should receive less than the minimum wage while employed in an industrial program. We've also worked together to promote the emergence of a standard on which publishers can agree that will make it easy to produce books in accessible formats. We've actually made a lot of progress this year, and I believe that over the next year, some sort of agreement will emerge that will at least make certain that textbooks for children will be available in an electronic form from their publishers, which can easily be converted into accessible formats. For the first time, children in school will be able to have books as soon as their peers do as a matter of right. The ACB continues to believe that the blindness community is too small and too threatened to be divided. We therefore welcome all opportunities for our whole community to speak with a single voice, and will continue to cooperate with all who are truly interested in seeing the rights of blind people extended. The next section of this speech gets a little bit technical, but I really want everybody to understand the next issue that I'm going to talk about. And I'm going to provide just a tiny bit of background, so please forgive me. Among the core values that underpin all that we do are two beliefs. We believe in the American Council of the Blind that blind people have the right to expect society to make accommodations to allow people who are blind to fully participate in their communities. We also believe that blind people have the right to choose. In terms of the disability rights movement, this is called consumer choice. And what that means in practical terms is that, for example, every blind person learning to use access technology should be able to choose what is best for him or her based on being exposed to more than one screen reader or more than one screen magnification software system. In another context, every blind person in rehabilitation should be able to choose where and how she is to be trained. But that choice needs to be made based on appropriate information about available options. And every blind person ought to be able to choose what job he or she wants and where he or she should work. This last inalienable right of blind people is being threatened by a proposed regulation from the Rehabilitative Services Administration. We're pleased to be able to welcome to the American Council someone who you'll hear later this evening, Dr. Frederick Schroeder, who is the commissioner of that organization. And I hope and believe that he'll respond to my remarks on this issue. This is a complex regulation, and I'm sure that I will, to a degree, in any short presentation, be guilty of oversimplifying in what I'm about to say. For the past several years, the Rehabilitative Services Administration has been concerned about being certain that rehabilitation counselors work for placements that optimize the ability and potential of consumers with disabilities, and that's a good thing. Emphasis has therefore been placed by RSA on making sure that the person with disabilities is employed in an integrated setting. And that may not be a good thing. In essence, this means that extra credit until this regulation came along was given to counselors who placed people out in the community working alongside people who are not disabled. That's okay, sort of. The American Council of the Blind and National Industries for the Blind have consistently argued that people with disabilities have the right to make an informed choice, and if, after making that informed choice, they want to work in an industry's program, they ought to be able to do that. The proposed regulation goes much further than RSA has ever gone before. It indicates that a placement in a setting that does not meet the test of integration will not count as a successful rehabilitation closure. It is suggested that people who can't be placed or choose not to be placed in an integrated setting must seek funding from other sources rather than through vocational rehabilitation. Rehab dollars can be used for training and evaluation in industry programs, but individuals who declare their intention to work in an industry program that does not qualify as integrated forfeit the right to rehabilitation dollars or to be counted as a successful placement. There are many people who choose to work in industry programs because such programs have set up opportunities for blind people that will actually allow them to earn more money than they're likely to outside of an industry program. The Seattle Lighthouse, for example, has set up a cooperative program with the aircraft industry that allows blind people to earn more than $11 an hour. Yet a person choosing to work in such a program would be declared not countable as a successful rehab closure. Both the 1992 and 1998 amendments of the Rehab Act clearly and unequivocally regard consumer choice as a value that should be paramount in delivering services to people who are disabled. Yet this new regulation seeks to force people not to work in industry programs because they do not meet the integration test and therefore cannot count as a successful rehabilitation outcome. As if this were not arbitrary enough, supported employment placement is accorded more weight by RSA than a placement earning at or above the minimum wage in an industry's program. We in the American Council of the Blind categorically and unequivocally oppose the abrogation of the right of a blind person to choose with full information where he or she chooses to work by a regulation that arbitrarily makes value judgments about the quality of work that's available in an industry's program. We will protect the right of blind people to choose to work in industry programs and will oppose the implementation of this new rule. We're disturbed that the federal government should seek through regulations to categorically limit consumer choice, which is a core value of the legislation under which rehabilitation services are provided. We're even more astounded that the National Federation of the Blind is apparently prepared to support a regulation that has the potential of denying thousands of blind people the right to perceive themselves as successful or to receive the ancillary rehab services they deserve because they choose to work in industry's programs. Ladies and gentlemen, fewer than 170 people who are only blind are working for less than a minimum wage in industries programs affiliated with National Industries for the Blind. Thousands of blind people are working at well above the minimum wage in such programs. They perceive themselves, and we perceive them, as successful. This regulation would brand them failures. It would also make it less likely that rehab would look to industry's programs as appropriate placements for those who might choose to work in such programs. How can an organization that claims to be a proponent of consumer choice, as the National Federation of the Blind claims to be, support this regulation? I don't know. I look forward to hearing from Dr. Schroeder in a few minutes and hope he can allay our fears concerning the impact of this regulation. We're particularly pleased to welcome Dr. Schroeder here because it's been too long since we've had the pleasure of his presence. I've had the opportunity to get to know Fred fairly well as we've worked together as delegates to the North American and Caribbean region of the World Blind Union. We in the American Council of the Blind have also worked hard this year, partly as a result of a resolution we passed last year, to develop more collaboration with the Rehabilitative Services Administration. And I need to tell all of you that Dr. Schroeder has worked hard to make these collaborations happen. And I'd like to thank Dr. Schroeder for that. J. During the past year, I had the opportunity to visit New Zealand as president of the American Council of the Blind. I had the opportunity to meet a whole host of new friends there and to see an extremely strong consumer organization led by a gentleman who you will hear from later this week and who has become a very close friend of mine and who's also become very well known in a very short time in ACB. The president of Blind Citizens of New Zealand, Jonathan Mosen, is our international guest of honor this year. By the way, I need to report, as I try to every time I return from trips abroad, that New Zealand beer is as good as Australian beer. I'm not going to spend as much time on internal ACB affairs this year because you will hear, as the week goes on, from the other officers of ACB and from our executive director, who will tell you about the work that they have been doing and the activities they coordinate. I must tell you about one exciting change that has taken place during this year. ACB decided to create a new position that would work to coordinate the efforts of the American Council of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind Enterprises and Services Program, which runs thrift stores, which raise much of the money we at ACB use to operate with. I'm very pleased to inform all of you that James Olson was appointed as both organizations' chief financial officer. I can't think of anyone more suited to help us build a seamless program of cooperation than Jim, and would ask all of you to join with me in congratulating Jim on his new and exciting position. I would not be able to do all the things I do as president were it not for the hard work of the board of directors and officers and of those in the national office. I thank all of those folks, and I also thank the folks who we sometimes forget who work in our Minneapolis office, who keep the dollars flowing, and who this year did such a good job, as they always do, making registration for the convention work as smoothly as it did. I'd also like to commend our web mistress, Earlene Hughes. Earlene, they said it couldn't be done, but registration online happened. And I'd like to inform all of you that 273 of those people, 281, sorry, of the people who registered for this convention did so online. I should announce now that in 2003, we will no longer mail out registration forms. It's okay, you can lynch me later. I also particularly want to acknowledge our executive director, Charles Crawford. His energy and enthusiasm and hard work have made my job much easier, and his news notes from the national office have done more to communicate with our members than any single action of an executive director in terms of communication that I'm aware of. Thank you, Charlie. Our organization is growing, ladies and gentlemen. Circulation of the Braille Forum has increased by 7% over the past year. There's a reason why we're attracting more people. We're doing it because we are the organization that consistently seeks to see to it that real change happens in the lives of people who are blind. I pledge to you that as president of the American Council of the Blind, I will continue to act as your steward. Like any good steward, I get to taste the wine. That means that I've had the chance to sample affiliates from all over the country this year. Our mid-year meeting is growing, and we held our largest legislative seminar ever. Our website, under the able leadership of Earlene Hughes, continues to grow from strength to strength. Many of our affiliates are growing as well. That's a sign of health. But we still have a great deal to do. I believe this has been a year of immense achievement, both for ACB and for people who are blind. That's a credit to all of the members of ACB, not to me. As I said at the start of this report, I can only cover the highlights. Many accomplishments and concerns are not included here. But I want to end this report with a challenge. Next year, we will be 40 years old. And we will meet in Des Moines. Incidentally, my presidency will come to an end then as well. I challenge ACB to work with me this year to give us even more to celebrate in Iowa. Help me by coming to Des Moines ready to celebrate a growth in every single affiliate. Help me by working at home and nationally to make sure that the new millennium that starts next year will be as rich with rights upheld and extended for people who are blind as we can make it. Let's work this year to make our streets safe for blind people and to make the information highway a place where blind people can drive. Let's make this the year when we reach out to each other and embrace success. May all of us, as individuals and organizations, welcome the new millennium proud of who and what we are and determined to show the world, whether it cares or not, that we and ACB are determined to be all that we can be. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. The honor that I get to have now is actually fairly immense because, and I'm not sure Dr. Schroeder remembers this, when I was a very young person in 1978, I first met Fred Schroeder. We were part of an AER, well, it wasn't AER then, but an AER panel on orientation and mobility. And I labored very hard, as one who is young will, to produce a document that was full of sound and fury, and I thought signified a great deal. And as a young person, it signified a lot more to me than it might have to other people. And Dr. Schroeder was on the panel, and I sort of was about to deliver my paper. Dr. Schroeder was on the panel before me. And those of you who have been around for a while, or at least since God was young, we'll remember that one of the hot issues in the late 1970s was whether totally blind people could, in fact, be orientation and mobility instructors. And Dr. Schroeder made an impassioned and very effective, highly effective statement on the subject of why a totally blind person ought to be an orientation and mobility instructor. And by the time Dr. Schroeder was finished, the nice thing from my perspective is that the folks who were listening in the audience didn't care what I said because they were already too mad. But since 1978, I've gotten to know Dr. Schroeder well, and I need to tell you that I don't think there are very many blind people in the United States of America who are as committed to the interests of blind people. He developed and made sure it became one of the premier agencies serving blind people in the state of New Mexico. He's always reaching out to help those not as able to help themselves. And as commissioner of RSA, while we may not like all that he has done, we can be very proud of the way that he's represented blind people as commissioner of RSA. Having said all those nice things and a few bad things earlier on, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you and ask you to welcome to the American Council of the Blind, Dr. Frederick Schroeder.
I remember that panel as well, and I hope that this evening isn't a repeat of the response that I got back then when I sought to enter the field of orientation and mobility. It is a real pleasure for me to be here with all of you this evening, and certainly a pleasure to have heard a pleasure to have heard all of the many accomplishments of the past year in the movement toward helping blind people achieve real integration, first-class status in society, and certainly want to commend you on your work. Let me begin by just simply reviewing with you a few of the major accomplishments of the past 8 years. As you know, I am an appointee of President Clinton, and his administration will end this coming January. And there are a number of changes in the field of rehabilitation that I think are noteworthy. During the past 8 years, the rehabilitation system in America has assisted 1,676,900 people with disabilities in going to work. And there continues to be a steady increase in the number of people who go to work each year. In 1992, the rehabilitation system assisted 191,890 people in going to work. Last year, that number was up to 229,829 people who found jobs with the assistance of state rehabilitation agencies. This means that in 8 years, we now have 37,939 more people going to work each year than we did at the beginning of the administration, nearly 40,000 people a year more being placed in employment. But, of course, this doesn't speak to the quality of the employment, and so another important measure is wages. One activity in which we've been involved has been a longitudinal study of the rehabilitation services program. We found that people placed in competitive integrated employment have made rapid gains in earnings and in access to health insurance over time. During the period of the longitudinal study, people placed in competitive employment averaged $7.56 per hour at closure, hardly a princely sum. But watch what happens over time. 1 year later, the average hourly earnings rose to $8.23. The next year, they were up to $10.25. And the next year, 3 years after closure, the average earnings for those same individuals placed in competitive employment were $13.48 per hour. Now, this represents an increase of just over 78% in earnings in 3 years, from about $7.50 an hour to $13.50 an hour, for those people placed in competitive employment. Viewed another way, 1 year after closure, average wages go up by about 75 cents an hour. Over the next year, they go up by about $2 an hour, and over the next year, they go up more than $3 an hour. This shows a steady upward acceleration in earnings over time. During the same period, access to health insurance has increased. At the time of closure, 38.2% of competitively employed individuals had access to health insurance. 1 year later, that number had risen to 49.2%. The next year, it was up to 55%. The next year, it was up to 58%. 58% of competitively employed people had access to health insurance. This is a number that very nearly approximates the access to health insurance among the general population. These are findings that we think speak very well to the effectiveness of rehabilitation services and the potential of rehabilitation services to help people prepare for a lifetime of employment, careers, not simply jobs. We are very concerned that rehabilitation services not solve the unemployment rate of people with disabilities by taking the unemployed and making them the underemployed. And so we have placed great emphasis on the aspect of wages and benefits. Some of the other areas in which this same theme has been reflected has been in changes to the Rehabilitation Act, which we proposed during the most recent reauthorization. Some of the changes that we proposed, and this may seem ironic, but I'll speak to it more specifically in a moment, we proposed language that would strengthen the choice provisions and expand the choice provisions that were first added to the Act in 1992. We also proposed changes that broaden the role of the Rehabilitation Council and strengthen the authority of the Rehabilitation Council, specifically making it no longer advisory. We proposed changes that resulted in a presumption of eligibility for an individual who is a recipient of Social Security supplemental income or Social Security disability insurance. Another change that we proposed deals with the right of an individual to develop his or her own employment plan. An individual can write his or her own plan or may seek assistance from anyone else, or the individual may seek assistance from a rehabilitation counselor in the customary fashion. I will digress a moment and say that a number of years ago when my daughter was graduating from sixth grade, it was at the middle school that I had attended, and I was asked to give the commencement address, and I gave what I thought was a real barn burner of a speech. And after it was over, I asked my daughter, I said, "How did I do?" And she said, "Well, you missed several good opportunities to sit down." So with that as a backdrop and realizing the tightness of the schedule, let me just simply move to the topic that perhaps is of greatest concern, and that has to do with the notice of proposed rulemaking that would amend the definition of an allowable employment outcome to eliminate sheltered work, or what you call industrial work. In our regulations, we refer to it as extended employment, but using all of those terms for a moment is interchangeable. We believe the Rehabilitation Act puts an emphasis on integrated employment, and as a result, there has been a steady decrease in the number of people assisted in entering sheltered work through state rehabilitation agencies. It's down by about 50% over the past two decades, both in real numbers and as a percentage of all successful closures. But in trying to understand this issue, one concern that we sought to address was the very real concern of people who said that they had not been directed toward sheltered work out of informed choice, but rather had been steered to sheltered work as the only available opportunity. This is the issue that we're trying to address. We're not trying to denigrate sheltered work. We're not trying to denigrate the quality of the employment per se, or the work that is done by blind people and others in sheltered workshops. But we are looking at our system and trying to set up an incentive that will push the system to develop integrated employment opportunities for people with disabilities. In trying to understand this issue, we looked at some of the data that we have. Last year, we placed nationwide 7,765 people in sheltered work. 7,765. Of those, 89.3% were closed at subminimum wages. The average hourly earnings last year for people placed in sheltered work was $2.53 an hour. Now, this is contrasted with $8.65 an hour for people placed in integrated employment. The problem of low wages is further compounded by limited work hours and limited access to health insurance. Our longitudinal study shows that people who are placed in sheltered work an average work week less than 30 hours a week, and projected out over 2 years, there is a slight increase, but it's still below 30 hours a week on average. We also found that access to health insurance was very limited. We found that at closure, only 16% of people placed in sheltered work had health insurance. 1 year later, that number had dropped to 12%. And 2 years later, the number dropped again to 11.7%. So contrast the 11.7% with access to health insurance in sheltered work as compared to 58% of those people placed in integrated employment. Now, one of the issues that we dealt with was whether blind people fared better than others when being placed in sheltered work. And in fact, there is some evidence that blind people overall do better in sheltered work than the rest of the population. But let me give you some of the data. Last year, the rehabilitation system assisted 434 blind and visually impaired people in entering sheltered work. Of those, 68% earned less than the minimum wage. So in other words, 137 people last year were placed at or above minimum wage. So we wanted to know how much above minimum wage do those individuals make. Of the 137 making minimum wage or above, 80% or 109, this is 109 of the 137, made between $5.15 an hour and $6 an hour. 13 made between $6.01 and $7 an hour. 5 made between $7.01 and $8. Two made between $8.01 and $9. Two more made between $9.01 and $10. And six, not 6%, but six people earned $10.01 and above. We believe that the system must be pressed to develop employment opportunities for people that offer the opportunity for upward mobility, that offer the ability for people to develop in their careers. And our data simply do not show these kinds of upward gains for people placed in sheltered work. I mentioned our longitudinal study. Let me just give you one more small piece of data. In our longitudinal study, at the time of closure, people placed in sheltered work average... Now, this is all people placed, not just blind people. Blind were too small to break out in our longitudinal study with any statistical reliability. But of people placed in sheltered work during the period of our longitudinal study, at closure, the average hourly earnings was $3.03. 1 year later, average hourly earnings dropped to $2.64. The next year, they were up slightly to $2.84, but this is still less than those same individuals made at the time they began working 2 years earlier. These are the issues that we are trying to address with the notice of proposed rulemaking. And the reason that we engage in a notice of proposed rulemaking is to take comment from the field, to get the perspectives from all people who have a stake in a particular issue, to make certain, not that we have a perfect policy, if we wait for a perfect policy, it'll never happen, but that in fact we have a better policy, one that promotes high quality employment, real opportunities for integration for people with disabilities, including blind people. What we are hoping to achieve is to make sheltered work not the convenient placement for the system, but to make it a requirement of the system that it stretches to develop integrated employment opportunities for all people. Integrated employment opportunities that have brought with them higher wages and better benefits. Now, what if an individual chooses sheltered employment? One of the things in the notice of proposed rulemaking is that there would be an affirmative responsibility on the rehabilitation agency to refer an individual to a community provider if he or she is convinced that he or she is not interested in integrated work but wishes sheltered work or industrial work. We're not trying to prevent anybody from entering industrial work who genuinely seeks that as an employment outcome. But what it would mean is that the rehabilitation agency would not get credit for the closure unless the individual entered integrated employment, and this would be integrated employment at or above minimum wage with the exception of supported employment, and I'll speak more to that in a moment. But this is the underlying policy. The underlying policy to help the individual have access to the kind of employment that he or she might want. This would not close any sheltered workshops. Nobody currently employed in a facility would lose his or her job. Nobody would be forced to leave the program. One of the issues that we looked at is the idea of whether sheltered work constitutes really transitional employment. Do people develop work skills and leave sheltered employment? And frankly, we don't have good data. We do have some data. We used to have a report, the RSA 62, which is a report of the activities of state rehabilitation agencies in conducting annual reviews of people placed in extended employment. We looked at the we no longer use that reporting instrument, but we looked at the last 3 years when we collected data with that instrument. We found only 3% of people. I'm almost done, trust me. Yeah. We found only 3% of people were referred for additional rehabilitation services. So again, the intent here is to try to line up the incentives so that when an individual comes through the door, perhaps the individual is a high school dropout, perhaps has no work experience, has little or no skills, that the agency, the system, will be compelled to work with that individual to develop the individual's potential and not just place the person in the most readily available job, but really develop the kind of employment opportunity, the employment outcome for the individual. That is the intent. And I am... I am not naive in believing that there would be no negative side to a dramatic policy change, but I tell you sincerely that my intent is to try to strengthen the quality of employment for blind people and others, to try to expand the opportunities for blind people and others. Someone said to me recently, why would somebody want to work at McDonald's for $5.15 an hour and no benefits when they could work in a facility for $8 an hour and a benefit package? And of course the answer is they wouldn't. And as I say, what we would do is certainly make appropriate referral if an individual wished that employment setting. But I don't regard it as choice to say to an individual, you can have integration and poor wages and poor working conditions, or you can have a separate setting and good wages. That to me really is not choice. Choice would come about when an individual could be offered $8 an hour, one in a facility and one in an integrated setting, and could genuinely choose. That's what we're trying to achieve. And I'm quite sincere when I say that we welcome your comments. We welcome any suggestions that you have in how we can approach this serious policy issue in a way that ensures that all people who enter the rehabilitation system genuinely have access to the very best rehabilitation services possible. So again, let me thank you very much for having me here this evening. It has been a real pleasure to be here, and certainly to work with your president and other leaders over the last several years. And with that, Mr. President, I will conclude my remarks. Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Bob. I really do appreciate your coming. Thanks. Oh, very well-reasoned remarks, sir. I'm impressed.
All of you will be very glad I will not exercise my right to rebut. The next item on our agenda, I'm going to postpone, because the next item on our agenda is the singing of the ACB song, and the only person who can lead us in that will do so when he's giving his executive director's report, and that's Charlie Crawford. So, for the ACB song, tune in Friday. The next item on our program this evening is an exciting one. I believe that the Braille Forum constitutes one of the most effective publications for blind people in the world. And I believe that the American Council of the Blind is a unique organization in having made a determination that the freedom of our publications will be assured and determined by creating a board of publications that is beholden to nobody, and that essentially controls what we publish, whether the board likes it or not. And to present Board of Publications awards this year, it gives me great pleasure. I'll learn to speak soon. It gives me great pleasure to introduce someone who's been extremely active in the year that she served in that post. Please welcome Kim Charlson.
Thank you, Paul. I first would like to recognize my colleagues who serve with me on the ACB Board of Publications. Appointed by President Paul Edwards, is also Jay Doudna from Pennsylvania. Winifred Downing, elected by the membership from California. Charles Hodge from Virginia. And Janine Stanley from Ohio. These three individuals serve two-year elected terms by the membership. And I want to acknowledge the service of Janine Stanley over the past 2 years. It's my understanding from her announcement at our meeting yesterday that she will not be seeking re-election to her term because of professional and academic pursuits. And I want to recognize her now and have you join me in saying thank you to her for her 2 years of service on the Board of Publications. The ACB Board of Publications administers two specific awards, the Ned E. Freeman Writing Award and the Vernon Henley Media Award. We will not be presenting a Vernon Henley Media Award this year, but we are presenting an Ned E. Freeman Writing Award. The recipient of this year's award has contributed a number of articles to the Braille Forum in the past few years. ACB members might recognize such interesting titles as Runner's High, published in the May 1996 issue, or Encounters of the Lobbyist Kind, January 1998, or the evocative title of The Carrot Takes a Bus Ride, July 1998. And recognizing him for his contribution to ACB, his winning article submission, Passing Through, a review of Planet of the Blind, a memoir, for his contribution to writing, I'd like to recognize Ken Stewart and ask him to come forward to accept his award. Many of you may recognize his name in other venues, since he's very active as well in CCLVI. Let me read the plaque. The Ned E. Freeman Excellence in Writing Award of the American Council of the Blind is presented to Ken Stewart for the promotion and publication of writing excellence by and for blind people, Louisville, Kentucky, July 2nd, 2000. Ken?
Picture, guys. So everybody in the audience.
Hold on. Okay.
Congratulations,
Thanks,
Ken.
Thanks, Kim.
You want to say a few words? I'm going to let Ken say a few words.
Where is it? Yada da yada da. Blah blah blah. I much appreciate this recognition. It's just a terrific honor, and I thank Kim so much and the whole board of publication. And I certainly agree with Paul Edwards that the Braille Forum is just a wonderful publication. And we also have several other publications in the blind community that I am very proud to contribute to from time to time. Dialogue by Blind Skills, and of course we all love Carol McCarl. She'd be here tonight, except she's celebrating the marriage of her daughter in Oregon. And CCLVI has another publication, really high quality, Vision Access, edited by Joyce Kleiber, of course, and Penny Reeder of the Braille Forum. Yes, let's give all of them recognition. Thanks to them. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Ken. And I acknowledge and wholeheartedly second Ken's comments about our affiliate publications. They're the heart and soul of the American Council of the Blind. And the Board of Publications, this is my opportunity to give you an announcement in advertising, is sponsoring an editor's workshop for those valiant editors who work on the publications that are the heart and soul of our organization on Thursday at 1:30. So please come. All right. Back to now that we've had that advertisement. I'd like to ask Jim McGivern and his guests to come forward. I'm also presenting an award this evening that is a special achievement award. The Board of Publications has been involved for the past few years in efforts and working on the ACB history. The Board of Publications this year wished to present a special award to someone who you'll find out shortly contributed to the principles of freedom and the creation of the Board of Publications. Mr. Hollis Liggett, we're presenting this evening a special exceptional achievement award to him for his contributions as editor of the Braille Free Press. between 1959 and 1961. Hollis Liggett established the moral and ethical tenor of the debate within the organized blind movement, which, of course, led in turn to the formation of the American Council of the Blind. Your common sense, Hollis, and down-to-earth writings brought understanding to many regarding the turmoil within the organized blind movement of the era. And those writings still are with us today and speak to us with just as much moral force and persuasion as they did in 1959 to 1961. I felt that it was important for you to hear some of the writings of Hollis Liggett, and I've asked Jim McGivern, the historian who is working on the manuscript for the history of the American Council of the Blind, to share a little bit of Hollis's writing with you. I think the power of it speaks for itself, and it also gives you a little sampling of some of the manuscript of the ACB history that's in preparation now, and an opportunity to look forward to its publication. I'm going to turn the mic over to Jim McGivern to share with you some of Hollis's writings.
Thank you, Kim. How many were at the NFB convention in Boston in 1958? You raise your hands? I see you, MJ. What happened after that convention, the infamous Card Amendment, was what led to the split and the creation thereby of the American Council of the Blind. The assessment of the Card Amendment in the Braille Monitor by George Card and Jacobus Ten Broeck would not allow Durward McDaniel to express his opposing view. And it was that censorship that provoked the idea of forming a publication that would allow freedom of speech. And this is something of how it came about. Durward and Marie Boring were at the Nashville Convention of the Tennessee Federation, and they were, after that, vilified. You'll read the whole story later. But as a result, Durward met Hollis Liggett, and he told him, and this is in September 2nd of 1958, there's some talk of getting out a small regular periodical, and it may happen too. Do you think the Memphis chapter would underwrite a part of the cost? The idea of this periodical is one of the signs that the democratic insurgency within the NFB is taking on substantial form. Liggett's quick response made it obvious that the two men were very much on the same wavelength. And McDaniel, when he got Liggett's response, wrote to Marie Boring and a couple of the others, maybe MJ got a copy, and he said he was obviously pleased and wrote to his fellow rebels that I had a most wonderful letter from Hollis Liggett of Memphis. I think his insight and grasp of these issues is as good as anyone's. It is always heartening to find a mind of this quality among us. So it was thereby that Hollis Liggett and Durward McDaniel and Marie Boring became the big three as far as setting forth the philosophy of the what would become the American Council of the Blind. Of course, at that time, they were still trying to get the National Federation to return to a democratic policy. But it was Hollis Liggett, who had not been at the convention, who decided, when he heard what had happened, to write a letter directly to the president and the founder of NFB, Jacobus Ten Broeck. And it was the major issue at the Boston Convention was this Card Amendment, which led to the censorship. And this is part of what Hollis wrote in his famous letter of September 24, 1958, a five-page letter to President Ten Broeck. Pardon? Oh. It seems that you exercise complete authority in all matters concerning the Federation, that you and you alone can make decisions as to what action the Federation will take on an issue, what amounts of money it will spend, and for what, whom it will hire, and how much it will pay. You have no need, except by choice, to consult with anyone upon any of these matters. And then when the question of censorship was raised, he said, here, Ten Broeck denied it, saying that there was complete freedom of expression and discussion. And Hollis goes on to ask, there is no greater indictment of your position than the fact that the Federation leadership used its powers to prevent any free and open discussion of the problem of the Card Amendment. The NFB's only publication was deliberately and systematically closed to any views which would in any way reflect upon the leadership. Surely you know that denial of freedom of speech and freedom of the press is the chief tool of totalitarianism. You have it in your power to close the press of the organized blind, and now you will seek the power to dictate who shall attend what state conventions. Where will it end? Real democracy is measured much more by the toleration of minority views by the majority than by docile submission by the minority. The frantic efforts which you and the other leaders have made to suppress information and control activities is symptomatic of a desperation born of insecurity and fear. You have placed yourself in the incongruous position of defending that same philosophy, namely paternalism, for which you have so vigorously and so relentlessly attacked the agencies. No one wishes more fervently than I that this conflict could be resolved and that we could once more work together as one. But I do not value unity so much that I would seek it at any price. There are several other references that you'd need fuller context to appreciate, but he ends up saying that I shall seek to circulate the letters as the information as widely as possible throughout the country. And he has a few final remarks saying that he would like to recommend that there be a full report of the results made that make plain to the membership just what it is that the Federation money goes for. And this was going to be the major issue that would come forward in the coming year. So here is Hollis Liggett, the author.
I want to read it back here. I'll read it to them and present it to you. I'm going to read the plaque to Hollis Liggett, the American Council of the Blind, Board of Publications, Exceptional Achievement Award, presented to Hollis Liggett in recognition and appreciation for his contributions to independent thought and democratic principles through his service as editor of the Braille Free Press from 1959 to 1961. Louisville, Kentucky, July 2nd, 2000. It's my pleasure, Hollis. Thank you. Thank you. Congratulations. Well, that'll make you come back.
say a few words.
Thank you, Kim, and thank you to Jim McGivern, who I know had a lot to do with making this plaque possible, this award. I would like to take just a few minutes to say something about my experience with the Federation and with the Free Press. I'm the only regret I have tonight is that Derwin McDaniel is not here to share or to give me the plaque for which they've decided that I've earned. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the history. I'm not going to last very long now. But the first I knew about any problems in the NFB was a letter from Marie Boring, which she circulated all over the country and outlining the problems they had with Dr. Tenbrook and the Federation and the lack of any democratic procedure. Anyway, I wrote a letter in response to her letter and sent it to the president and the administration officials and the board members. And anyway, in response to my letter, I got a call from Derwin McDaniel, and Derwin was feeling pretty discouraged that time. He wasn't making very much headway, and he think he needed a friend and an ally, another one. He had some already, of course. So we discussed the problems at length, and a little while later, a month or two, I guess, I got another call from Derwood. He asked if he could come to Memphis and talk to the members of the Association of the Blind. And I said, sure. They most of them feel the same way I do, and I'm sure they'd be glad to see you. So he came, and we had a meeting, and I told him that I thought the Memphis Association were probably willing to. We had, in our discussion, decided that we wanted to get out some kind of newsletter, or it turned out it was a magazine. I thought the Memphis Association of the Blind would be interested and willing and glad to support such an endeavor with whatever it cost on the first issue. And Derwood talked to the members that night, and he got a little problem. It was one of the members had a drink or two, I think, before the meeting, and he felt good. And so he gave Derwood a real grill going over. He grilled him all, for a long time, 30 minutes on all kinds of questions, and some of them pretty hostile. And finally, Derwood whispered to me, he said, whose side is that guy on? And I said, he's on ours. And so there was a thank God. Anyway, that meeting, they voted unanimously to provide this money. And that, the reason I tell that story, because that was the beginning of the Free Press Association and its successor, the American Council of the Blind. And I'm proud of that, proud of the American Council of the Blind. I'm proud of my work with the Free Press, and I'm proud of the work that the monitor, I mean, excuse me, the forum is doing. And the my experience with the Free Press Association and the work I did was one of the highlights of my life. We had great camaraderie, had friendships that you don't make in ordinary life, and without such a struggle and a goal, a common goal that you're all struggling for. And the money came in after the first issue to continue the magazine. But all the other things we had to do on our own, had the long-distance calls and traveling to various meetings, and it took a good bit of money. One time, Derwood suggested a remedy for that, and he said, why don't we all just save all our receipts and keep up with anything you spend, and said, then we can submit it to Dr. Tenbrook for reimbursement. That is if we win. But we didn't win, so I want to tell President Edwards that I've saved all mine. Going with me.
I'll be glad to give you Dr. Bowers.
So, again, I'm very honored for this award, and that was the highlight of my life. I worked with the Free Press Association, and this is another highlight of my life. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hollis. This is your plaque.
Congratulations, Hollis.
Yes. Again, thank you to Hollis, and thank you to the support that the Board of Publications has received from the membership, and continue the feedback to us, and we do what we can to make our publication something that you all can be proud of. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited by opportunities for us to look back at where the ACB came from, because I think in looking backwards at where the ACB came from as this millennium ends, we can also look forward to how far we've come and to how far we have to go. But it's the courage and commitment that were characteristic of so many of those who risked their reputations and friendships to create the American Council of the Blind that we can never celebrate too often. So, ladies and gentlemen, join me once more in expressing our appreciation to Hollis Liggett. The next part of our program continues the celebration, and to join me to do this portion of the program, it's with great pleasure that I ask our Chief Financial Officer, who's now, of course, very rich, Mr. Jim Olson, to join me for this portion of the ceremony.
Good evening. While we get the stage set down front here, for those of you that are receiving life memberships, as you are seated and facing to the front, if you'll come towards the left-hand portion of this podium on the main floor, your certificates will be presented to you by Paul Edwards there, or is it Colonel Edwards? Assisting us down here tonight will be my wife, Ann, Sharon Lovering from the office, Ann Fesch, Cynthia Towers, and those of you in the audience, if you've got a person in and near your affiliate that's receiving and you're sighted, it would certainly benefit us to help with assistance to bring the person forward. When the lifetime memberships were started in 1986, our first recipient of it and the first person to purchase was Justin Dart. And today, by the conclusion of presenting these, we will be at 131. We are 16 closer to 2,000 by the end of 2000. So there's a challenge for you. Okay, let us get started. During the year, many of these have come in during the year, and we present them at the National Convention. However, one that was earlier presented by President Edwards was at the Ohio affiliate in their convention in November to Dr. Leslie Page, and I would like you to recognize the fact that Ohio honored Dr. Page. Also, let me say that what I'm going to do to try to keep the speed going here somewhat is, as I announce one, the person's coming forward, and your applause, I will start to announce the second one, so the second person, because many of these are surprises that people do not know that they are being honored tonight. When they do get up here, and I'll try to watch, there is a microphone so the person can make an acknowledgement of thanks. And Jay, Mike, if the mic, the number one mic, could be turned on for that purpose, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. Sounds like it is. ACB of North Carolina tonight honors a lifetime-long member, Walter Gibson. This was dated back in October. Walter is not able to be here with us tonight, but again, we want to take and recognize him, and we will mail the certificate from Minneapolis to Walter. Hopefully, maybe Walter is listening on the ACB radio. From Hayward, California, Diana June Coleman, in December, sent us a check to purchase her life membership. Diana is a long supporter and member of the California Council of the Blind
and has done a lot of work in the state of California.
1 second, we're going backwards, Mr. Olson.
Oh, okay.
To accept the Walter Gibson Award,
okay.
From North Carolina.
Okay.
Would you like to say a few words?
My name is Donna Kumar, and I'm very pleased to accept this lifetime membership on behalf of Mr. Walter Gibson, who has been the president of the Durham, North Carolina chapter for the past 4 years. He is also a lifetime member of the United Veterans of America. Mr. Gibson began losing his vision in 1984 at the age of 69 due to glaucoma. And at that time, he began participating in independent living classes. And now, at the age of 85, he still lives alone, does his own cooking and laundry, and he has quite a bit of technology in his home at the age of 85. He's very willing to learn new living skills, and he's just a delightful individual and a very positive example to other white people in our community.
I'm very honored to accept this honor. We expect the gentleman to be at our convention in 2020 to celebrate.
Is Diana there?
Is Lady coming
back? Diana.
All right.
Well, congratulations. Diana Colburn, I'm sorry. But congratulations anyway. We're very proud that you've chosen to do this. Would you like to say a few words?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Miss Diana? Diana says it's better than her foot, but I don't have the experience to be sure.
Okay. In February, one of our state affiliates sent us a check to honor a longtime member of its affiliate and a person who has been a member of the ACB Board of Directors in the past years of ACB's directorship. The Badger Association of the Blind honors Adrian DeBlay tonight by presenting him with a life membership. Adrian? Time's up.
First of all, it's a long walk up here. This is a total surprise. I had no inkling of it whatsoever. And my wife is a member of the Board of Directors of the Badger Association. So now you know how well Virginia can keep a secret. I'm extremely honored. Thank you very much, everybody, for this honor.
Another active supporter and a member of the ACB of Ohio to be honored tonight. Back in March, we received a check as a life membership for Lillian Siegel. Lillian?
Is Lillian here?
And it looks as though Lillian is not.
Okay. Yes, she is. Okay. Sorry.
If you
weren't here, they were going to take the plaque away.
From me. Hi, Lillian. Congratulations. I am very proud of you for getting a life membership, and here's your plaque. Would you like to say a few words?
It's going to be hard.
Okay.
I want to deeply thank everyone who was responsible for this. I am absolutely speechless, and that's very hard for me. And I do want you to know that this is an anniversary year. My first convention was here 20 years ago.
Congratulations, Lillian, and thank you very much. Mr. Olson.
Okay, continuing with another surprise. It's always hard to keep a surprise from somebody that's very active in their state. They didn't get a chance to approve this in their state level. They kept it a secret. He's also a member of our national board of directors. ACB of Colorado honors J. Allen Beatty.
Is there a tail twister present who could watch Alan as he comes forward to try to establish something that he does wrong so we can fine him? Actually, he was probably out smoking. Which is where I want to be.
Is Alan here?
Let's come back to Alan later.
We'll come back to Alan. When he comes in, let us know, please.
Yep.
Okay. Our next honoree has been a member within her state for over 45 years. Lucille Fierce has been a member of the United Workers for the Blind, on an affiliate of the Missouri Federation, which is now the Missouri Council of the Blind. Lillian is this year's Missouri
Lucille.
Council of the Blind awardee. Lucille, pardon me, excuse me.
There are a bunch of people from the Missouri Council of the Blind when I was an awful lot younger who tried to help put me on the straight and narrow path. I don't hold them responsible for anything that I've become, but people like Lucille always gave me wonderful advice. Most of the time I didn't take it, but Lucille was always there to tell me the right thing. Congratulations, Lucille. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
Say a few words for it.
I thank the Missouri Council for the Blind for having given me this award. As you just heard, I've been a member for a long time. And there are 75 of us, I think, Missourians here this year. And to my surprise, Lillian Siegel was also given an award. And Lillian and I were together in, 1949, I believe. We took our training from, it was AWB at the time, in Michigan. We spent 6 weeks together. And I was glad that I had the opportunity to hear her here tonight. And I was a little bit of the Free Press group in Missouri when it started. I didn't get to stay with it too long, but I usually try to get involved in whatever's happening, and I've been doing it for a long time. And thank you.
Congratulations, Lucille. There you go.
The next life member is Janice
B. Gable of Jackson, Mississippi. She's purchased a life membership in memory of her late husband, Carter J.K. Gable. Carter was a dedicated, hard-working member of the Mississippi Council of the Blind and also a vital person working for the Blinded Veterans Association for many years. Janice is a charter member of the Mississippi Council of the Blind and still continues to be very active with them today. Janice?
Ladies and gentlemen, when I went down to Jackson, Mississippi, one of the highlights of my visit was an opportunity to spend a little bit of time with Janice and some of her friends at her home. And I got to tell you that Janice is a mean musician with a great voice. So we should honor Janice not only as a life member of the American Council of the Blind, but as one of the most wonderful musicians in ACB. Janice?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very honored to be a life member of ACB. I love ACB. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. It's always a delight to have a spouse honor their partner with a life membership in ACB, and such is the case with our next life membership. The new life member is currently a member of the ACB Board of Directors, Debbie Grubb. Please receive this life membership certificate as presented by your husband, Freela.
Aww. I'm going to give all of you a hint. Whenever you hear a dog coming down the corridor with a bell on, you'll know it's Debbie. And I'll give you one more hint. Whenever you find a person who's working hard and despite every adversity continues and gets it done, you'll also have found Debbie Grubb. Deb. Congratulations, Deb.
Thank you. This is such a surprise, and like everybody else up here, speechlessness is not usual for me, but I truly am. This is one of the greatest honors of my life. I, too, love ACB very much, and through all my adversity and triumphs, the friendships that I have gotten here, and all of the love and support and appreciation, it just goes with me for my whole life, and it is such an honor to be in this organization and to be able to do my work for you all. Thank you so much.
Congratulations, Debbie.
And Debbie, when we've put Freela to work, you can buy one for him, too.
Well, how do you surprise two members of your state affiliate with new life memberships? In the case of the Mississippi Council of Blind, you do it by sending to Minneapolis a check and starting it that way as a surprise. Then you purchase an ad in the convention program and list their names. And boy, was I surprised when Terry called me and said, "Do you know so-and-so are life members?" Because it was a surprise I was supposed to keep. Anyway, on behalf of the Mississippi Council of Blind, if they haven't read their name in the convention program and seen their names as new life members and congratulated, it's no longer a surprise. But if not, Mississippi Council of Blind tonight honors Clyde Morris Ward and Bonnie Gordon Thompson.
Some of the hardest questions that I've ever been asked have been asked me by Morris Ward, who will call me up sometimes fairly late at night, and he asks questions for which there are no good answers, like how many ACB members can you get on the head of a pin, and does it matter if they're vendors? But Morris is a huge contributor to ACB. Bonnie Thompson, for a while, hasn't been as well as we'd like her to be. In the past, she was wonderfully active at the national level as well as at the state level. And tonight, she's wearing some of the nicest cologne I've smelled in a long time. Bonnie, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, Mississippi, so much. It's been such an honor to work with the Mississippi Council of the Blind and ACB. I guess about 20-some-odd years. It's been a while. But it's all been fun, and it's all been worthwhile. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Congratulations.
Now, who's accepting for old Morris here? Well, this is a person who's run for the ACB board and who I'm pleased to tell you is the newest member of our convention committee, Mr. Mike Smitherman. So if you all have any complaints about exhibits this year, get hold of Mike and leave me alone. Here's Mike Smitherman to accept on behalf of old Morris.
If Morris really wanted to come, and if he hadn't had he hadn't had a few health problems, he might have made it this year. Because he told us some tales about Louisville 20 years ago. Some of us finally got to come, but let me thank the Mississippi Council of the Blind for Morris and thank ACB for their support of our organization down in Mississippi.
Mr. Olson, have you enjoyed the ACB website? Well, welcome our new webmaster and New Life member, Erlene Hughes. Thanks, Erlene, for all your work.
When Erlene was first interviewing for the job of webmistress at ACB, Erlene was a little diffident, a little shy, and she was a little uncertain about whether it was okay to tell us off when we did bad things. Now, I think we've about got Erlene trained so that she knows that in ACB, the main thing is to get it done right. Well, I'm glad to recognize Erlene as a life member while she's up here. I would really like to say what a pleasure it has been to have Erlene work to make ACB's website the preeminent website for people who are blind. Congratulations, Erlene.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you a hug.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. This is something that I've wanted to do, because loyalty means a lot to me, and when I get a chance to work on the website, that is spreading the word of democracy and freedom. And I want you all to know that I'm proud to be a member of the finest organization of blind people in the world. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again, Erlene.
Last fall, I had the pleasure of meeting Frank Hawes of Alaska. Frank has been a member of the American Council of Blind since 1984, and following complications of diabetes, Frank died last November. At that time, he was treasurer of the Alaska Independent Blind, who has honored him tonight with a life membership. Lynn Corral, would you come forward and please accept the certificate and return it to Alaska to give to June, his wife.
Lynn Corral, who is... president of Alaska Independent Blind, and who's also one of the leaders of the radio reading service movement in the United States, will be accepting the award.
I'm just sorry that he had to die this year, and that we waited this long to give it to him. And though we didn't agree politically, he was always a bright spot in our organization. He was our second vice president. He had just been reelected. Helped out with voting access, which still we're working on. And we hope to have a bill called the Frank Haas Voting Accessibility Act in Alaska, and worked on parking placards for people with disabilities. So on his behalf, I'm sure he'd be honored. He was a member of the American Council of Blind before Alaska Independent Blind. I appreciate all this organization has done for him. And he was here at our convention in, 1996, I think. Whenever Tulsa was. 1996. I was right, 1996. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lynn. Well, I have a question. As the tail twister, Mr. Alan Beatty, were you outside smoking?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
You're fined 2 packs of cigarettes to be paid to the president. Alan, on behalf of the Colorado Council of the Blind, it's my pleasure to present you with a life membership in the American Council of the Blind.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Thank you very much, ACBC. I'm very, very surprised, and I'm so delighted.
You're a great organization. Thank you, ACB.
Take care, Mr. Allen.
Our next life member is from Connecticut, Ben V. Luden. You probably don't recognize his name. He called our Minneapolis office about a week ago to make a donation, and after talking with Elaine Vining in the office and they discussed the life membership, he decided that was the right thing to do. And so tonight we honor Ben with his first contact with ACB, and he's already started as a life member. And we'll send that out to him, and thanks to Elaine for her encouragement for him to do that.
Now, the question is, what's he going to do for an encore?
Maybe he'll buy for the rest of the state.
Work on it, Charlie Hodge.
Yeah. Okay. The next one, my speech is pretty much written for me by the affiliate that's making the presentation. The next award is presented to a person who has served on the board of directors of the Kentucky Council of the Blind in several capacities, and whether a board member or not, her ideas always seem to get to the right people. Many people do not realize that without the support this person gives to KCB, many events would not have taken place. This person is the first of four generations here with us tonight. Thank you for everything you have done. Kentucky Council of the Blind would like to present a lifetime membership to Verna L. Dotson Lula.
In Kentucky, there are an awful lot of people who make this affiliate what it is, and this lady certainly has played her part.
She's coming to our left.
Here's your plaque, and congratulations very much, and thank you for all you've done for the Kentucky Council.
I have enjoyed being a member of the Kentucky Council. It has been a long life. It seems like I was one of the first members of the council, and I thank you very much.
I bet you she makes a mean derby pie, too.
Oops, pardon me? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mr. Jim.
The next recipient has known ACB since childhood, whether serving as an affiliate president, a national board member, or as an advisor about many council issues. Because of the leadership shown, the affiliate, it has weathered some storms and celebrated many triumphs. This person is the second of four generations here with us tonight. We all know this person's work, for it is visible to us as we speak, because she is the chairperson of this year's host committee. Thank you for your job well done. Kentucky Council of the Blind honors as a lifetime membership, Carla S. Rushable.
I also think it's pretty significant that the fireworks happened when Carla's award did. Congratulations, Miss Carla.
Goodness. I thought I knew everything that was going on in this organization. Oh, gracious, what a surprise. I really appreciate it. ACB is really a great, super organization, and it's just really exciting to see it growing. I think it's one of the greatest honors that I've ever had is to be a life member, and I sure do thank whoever did it. So, thank you very much.
Congratulations, Carla. What a great job Carla's done in putting this convention together, too. I think she's been the single thread that binds Kentucky to the rest of the world.
Carla, I heard you had money in Kentucky, and I wanted some. Okay. In a rich tradition of honoring members of its affiliate who have provided many years of leadership, both nationally and within their state, this affiliate honors as a new life member to one of its great leaders this year. the past president, the Florida Council of the Blind, honors Carl McCoy.
In 1977, I had just arrived back in the United States from the Caribbean, and I was trained at a rehab center in Florida where the director happened to be a guy named Carl McCoy. And I got through the rehab center okay and went back to where I was living, in fact, gotten a job in Daytona, and I kept getting calls from this guy, and he kept saying to me, "Hey, Edwards, you ought to become involved in the council. You ought to get involved." So I don't know if you guys might want to take the life membership back, but the person who's responsible for getting me involved in ACB and FCB, Carl McCoy. Congratulations, Carl.
Thanks a lot. Well, you all know I'm very proud to be a life member of ACB, but I'm especially proud of my membership in Florida, too. I spent 4 years as president, and they're a great bunch of folks. And we've got a lot of them here. So again, let me thank you, all of you, but especially our folks back in Florida.
Congratulations again, Mr. Carl.
Carl, I have to say my congratulations, too, because you're one of the very first in ACB that's helped provide me the leadership when I started in 76 and 78. Thank you. Mr. President, that does it.
Oh.
And we did it with fireworks at the end. May I just simply announce to all of you that our surprise members of life memberships tonight, there is a special reception for life members that's held in the presidential suite. It's Friday, 5:30 to 7, pardon me, 5:30 to...
Quarter to 7.
To quarter of 7, yeah. Anyway, we do have some letters of invitation up here if you'd like to come up and pick up one afterwards, but that's preceding the banquet, and it is in the presidential suite.
And Jim, don't go anywhere because we have one more to do before you leave.
Oh, okay.
I'm on my way back.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have one more award, and I suppose that it's accurate to say that I've taken some presidential prerogative in making a decision to do this award, but when I've made it, I think all of you will understand where from the award comes and why it's being given and to whom. But I would like to ask a lady who many of you won't recognize her name, so I can ask her to do it. If I can find what I'm looking for in my braille light, I'd like to ask Ms. Lori Kay to come forward, if she would. This year, as I said in my presidential remarks, descriptive video services are 10 years old, and I would like to present a certificate to the new director of descriptive video services on behalf of the American Council of the Blind. And while Lori's on her way up, what I'd like to do is to read you what this certificate says. The American Council of the Blind recognizes by this certificate the pioneering efforts made by WGBH in Boston, Massachusetts to make descriptive video services a reality on television, on videotape, and in movie theaters. We hereby celebrate with WGBH the 10th anniversary of descriptive video and congratulate its directors and staff for their ongoing advocacy on behalf of the hundreds of thousands of blind people who benefit from video description. Congratulations, Lori. And I invite Lori to say a few words, if she would.
Thank you, Paul, for this award, and I want to thank all of you who have supported WGBH and Descriptive Video Service over these years. We couldn't have done it without you. And I also want to thank Laura Oftedal, she's here with me, who worked with us for most of the past 10 years and was a major force in getting DVS where it is today. Laura?
Thank you, Lori.
And thank you, ACB. You have made DVS one of the best things that's ever happened for blind people. And although I have left Boston and Descriptive Video Service, DVS will always have a very fond spot in my heart, and I'll remember my 10 years at WGBH very fondly. Thank you.
Yeah, Laura's not only left DVS, but she's moved far away from the Boston area. The cold finally got to her, I think. So we wish Laura well. I'd like to invite to come up and present some awards, Ms. Dawn Christensen. We're getting there, guys. The only excuse I'll make for tonight is I had actually asked our convention program to start at 7:30 instead of 8 o'clock. But it got lost somewhere. They thought, I guess, I meant the entertainment to start, whereas I meant the program to start.
All right. Good evening, everyone. We're going to try to be as quick as we can with this, but people certainly deserve their day in the sun. I'm delighted to share with you, as awards chair, that this year we will be presenting 5 of the 6 awards that the awards committee is responsible for, 3 this evening and 2 at Friday evening's banquet. I certainly couldn't do this alone. I have a wonderful committee. I'd like to share with you their names. Mike Duke from Mississippi, Elizabeth Lennon, Michigan, Roger Peterson. See, when you win an award, you get stuck on a committee. Remember that. Roger Peterson of California, and Mike Richmond of Vermont, and the wonderful help that Terry Pacheco has given us this year. So I'm sharing the duties. They really think very highly of me in reducing my stress level and the amount of gray hairs that I get, so they're helping me present the awards this year. This evening, we will be presenting the Membership Outreach Award, the Growth Award, and the George Card Award. I'd just like to say thank you to all of you who have given or sent nominations to us. It's amazing to me. When I look around, I see all these people that I know have done great things. These nominations are people we do know, people we don't know. We could have hundreds of awards and still not touch the surface of those who deserve them. So thank you very much for submitting nominations. You make our job very difficult, but that's what we want. So at this time, I would like to turn the microphone over to Elizabeth Lennon to present the Affiliate Outreach Award.
It gives me particular pleasure to present this award because it goes to an organization that I worked very hard along with Derwin McDaniel, Sam Janinski, Marvin Brotman, many other people, to start, 22 years ago. The Affiliate Award for a special project goes to the Council of Citizens with Low Vision for their project insights. And if Kalena Davis would come up, I'd like to present her with the plaque. Project Insight is a networking of people who were losing their vision, and it has been very successful. I want to read the plaque. American Council of the Blind.
Go to the mic, Elizabeth, if you can.
Oh, I'm sorry. American Council of the Blind presents to the Council of Citizens with Low Vision Affiliate Project Award Louisville for Project Insight, Louisville, Kentucky, July 2nd, 2000.
Thank you. We are so, so proud of this award. As Elizabeth said, this is a project where people who are losing their vision, and we have peer support groups, people all over the country, and we have been most fortunate. And I think I belong, and being president of one of the most special interest groups of the American Council of the Blind. Thank you.
At this time, I'm going to ask Terry Pacheco to do the Membership Growth Award. And we are growing. She's got some great figures for you.
Good evening. This is a pleasure. I would like to let you know that we may not have quite met, I think it was Paul's goal earlier this evening, but we have had 37 affiliates with membership growth in this year of 2000, and I think we should all be very proud of ourselves. One affiliate in particular had a 122% increase. And I'd like to read you the plaque for that award now. It says the American Council of the Blind Membership Growth Award presented to Council of Citizens with Low Vision International in recognition of largest percentage of membership increase in 2000, Louisville, Kentucky, July 2, 2000.
Thank you. If we can do it, so can you. One of our members in Florida, Rosanna Lippin, got 650 members this year. And she promises us that she's going to get maybe almost 1,000 next year. So I'd like you to meet her. And the other gal who was for Project Insight, Joyce Kleiber. And this is Rosanna. This gal has more energy than the, or should I say, the man in the moon or the woman in the moon, but she is just great. And last year we only had 21 votes, and because of her, we have 25 votes this year. Thanks, Rosanna.
Thanks, Coletta, and thank you to everybody, and thanks to my fine role models, Mr. Paul Edwards and Mr. Carl McCoy.
Oh.
For those of you too far back in the audience, I just got a kiss.
It's my pleasure in a sense of fraternal pride within this organization to now introduce Mr. Roger Peterson, who will be presenting the George Card Award.
And I have no idea what's wrong with the microphone.
Oh, it's not. I thought it was the microphone.
You know, last year when I got the Ambassador Award, someone told me that the caption of the picture said, Roger Peterson bowing at the mic. I was bowing because the mic was low. So I tried to get the mic a little higher this time, so I won't be bowing quite so much. Don said, once you get one of these awards, you get to start giving them, and that's kind of fun. And this is an award that's... you know, this is the upside of George Card. You know, we had the George Card Amendment earlier, and but George Card became a good buddy of the organization and a fine pioneer and an active leader in the organization. And this award is named after him, and it's an award for excellent services to blind people. The awardee this year happens to be someone that I've known for a very long time, who has provided both by precept and by example for the advancement of the welfare and of the rights and of the self-confidence and self-esteem of blind people. He lost his own sight at the age of 11 and didn't let that stop him from continuing on with all kinds of activities, including athletics. He was a skier and a bowler and all kinds of stuff like that, internationally known in that area. He served people with visual impairment by being a federal employee in the Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Health and Human Services, and that's no mean task, believe me. Someone just told me that the difference between the PLO and an HMO is that you can negotiate with a PLO. And then by example, and he's also served the blind men and women of Panama by being a Peace Corps member there and helping to organize the Helen Keller School for the Blind and by working there. To add to all these feats and to all the ways in which he's shown us the way to be successful blind folks, he's now showing us how to survive cancer. And that's no mean task either. I wish to read from the plaque here, and I want you to know we don't give people fingerprinted plaques. This plaque is still hermetically sealed in plastic, and because it has such good braille, as I mentioned last year, I can read it right through the plastic. The George Card Award, the American Council of the Blind, is presented to Raymond Bud Keith for his outstanding service, contributions to the blind, to people who are blind and visually impaired. And this is given in Louisville on July, what is this, the 2nd, 2000. And I'm very proud to be giving this award to Bud.
Thank you very much. If I sound a little spacey, it's because I'm on some pretty heavy pain medicine right now. But let me tell you, it's not from the cancer. It's from trying to lift my wife's luggage on our last vacation.
managed to make it up on this platform. That's something.
This is very special because it comes from a lot of people who have known me for many years and know my rough edges and know my belligerence and know that sometimes in fighting for what I believe, I haven't always been as polite or as considerate of others as I perhaps should have been. But we've been in a wonderful fight for a long time, and it's fantastic to see the progress and to be given the privilege of standing on this stage with all of the other people who have worked so hard and deserve the recognition. ACB's given me a lot over the years in terms of friendship and opportunities to try to use my ideas, and it also gave me a wife. I met Billie Jean at an ACB convention in 83. Since I'm not going to be given $1 million check for this, I would suggest that perhaps for future folks, if you think we've done some stuff that's worthwhile, that maybe we'd be given a little warning, or the next time be given a few minutes to talk about our thoughts and ideas that have helped us reach this point. I know that I was given a lot of opportunity when I was young, but I didn't recognize those opportunities. But then there were a lot of people behind me who helped me recognize that there were opportunities and who encouraged me to take them. And then as I got older, I learned to look for those opportunities. And then I found out that we ourselves can create those opportunities. And that's what ACB is all about, and that's what I've been all about, is trying to create those opportunities for other blind folks who perhaps haven't had the same support behind them, but who nonetheless deserve a chance to taste this world in all of its many flavors. It is a wonderful world out there. I hope more of you will really get out and see what it's like. I've had the privilege of going to 33 foreign countries, and to see how big this world is what makes life worthwhile and the joy that others share. So thank you for recognizing what pretty much I think I've done for myself, and then at the same time I hope I've done for other people. Thank you.
He was the author of the non-smoking motion at the ACB conventions too.
Yeah, well,
see, Roger just stole my thunder. I was about to tell you that, Bud Keith, you should all be grateful to Bud, those of you who oppose smoking, because it was he who made it so no smoking occurs in any meeting room where an ACB meeting happened. I would like to tell all of you that the Bud Keith Amendment wasn't nearly as overwhelmingly popular then as it is now. And there are still some of us who remember it as a day that shall live in infamy. I'd like to invite Jim Olson to come up and help me to give out two affiliate charters. The one of the charters that we're going to be giving out is actually a charter that recognizes a change of name. There was an organization that had a very long name, and I hope I get it right. It was the DC Association of Workers for the Blind. And the DC Association of Workers for the Blind decided to change their name, and in order to create a little suspense, I'll ask Jim Olson to read the plaque so that you'll know what that name in fact is.
Time for all the glass changes up here. This certificate of affiliation, be it hereby publicly acknowledged that District of Columbia Council of the Blind is recognized as a member in good standing with full membership rights thereof in the American Council of Blind on this 19th day of September 1998, because that's the date that they officially changed their corporate name. Mr. Edwards?
And who is coming to accept for them? Well, it gives me pleasure to actually present this charter to Miss Friends in Art herself, Miss Janice Peterson. Some of you who haven't necessarily been coming to convention very long may remember that one of the first conventions when I was president, we suddenly discovered that we had no one to do our national anthem, and at the very last minute, with no rehearsal and no opportunity to practice, Janice came forward and did it for us. And so she's been my friend ever since. But Janice, congratulations on behalf of the D.C. Council of the Blind, and welcome to our family. We're going to do a picture now.
Congratulations. Oh, okay. Sure. Quick. Emphasis fugitive. Are you done? That's true. Here he
is. To say a few words on behalf of the affiliation post picture, and remember, a picture is worth 1,000 words. You have 2 left.
You know, our organization was DC Association of Workers for the Blind for a very long time. We were organized in 1913. And old names have a way of developing sentiment and tradition. And so it was really, I think it was time for us to change our name, and I think that it had to do with some youth coming into the group and so on. But when I became president, I said, boy, that's one thing I'm going to do. I want us to represent who we are and what we do. And I'm so delighted to accept this charter and to say I love what Bud just said about making opportunities. I think it's time we've made more than we have up to this point. Thank you.
At the February 2000 Board of Directors meeting of the American Council of the Blind, a request for affiliation was submitted by a group. At that board meeting, it was recognized by the Board of Directors that this was one of the best prepared requests for affiliation that the board had ever seen. The board approved the affiliation of this group by a unanimous vote, and it's with great pleasure that I ask Jim Olson to read the charter that will be presented acknowledging as an affiliate by Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays, BFLAG.
It reads, Charter of Affiliation is hereby public. It hereby publicly acknowledges that Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays is recognized as a member in good standing with full membership rights thereof in the American Council of the Blind on this 20th day of February 2000.
And I'm assuming that Rob is going to come to accept this? Very good. The person who probably has been more responsible for quietly educating those of us in ACB who needed to learn things is a gentleman from Oklahoma whose name is Rob Hill, who is going to be receiving this award or this charter. And now for his 2 words, Rob Hill.
Gee. 2 words, let me think. Oh, I'm over the limit. Thank you, President Edwards, or Colonel Edwards, I should say.
Thank you.
Certainly. I'd like maybe as instead of making a lot of comments, to ask one of our members, Marianne Sussman, to read from our Constitution the purpose statement. It may tell folks a little bit more about what we're all about. Marianne, would you please?
Thank you. The purpose of Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays, BFLAG, is to provide for the betterment of the lives of those who are visually impaired and who are lesbian or gay. A, through a membership organization primarily of visually impaired persons who accept and affirm the purposes of BFLAG. B, by providing a forum for the views and concerns of visually impaired persons interested in issues facing those who are gay or lesbian. C, by providing information about publications of interest to members that are produced in accessible format, and by encouraging the production of such material in accessible format. D, by facilitating the free exchange of ideas, opinions, and information relative to matters of concern to blind people who are gay or lesbian. E, seek to assure adequate services to those who are gay or lesbian by agencies and institutions serving the blind.
Thanks, Marianne, very much. As I heard the commissioner present the proclamation this evening, one of the things that ACB was recognized for was its openness to all persons, to all blind persons. And this certainly is an example of that, and I thank the ACB for that. We'll work toward meeting those purposes that Marianne has read, and we work to be a very effective special affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'd like to ask Rochelle Foley from South Dakota to come forward and give our credentials report. We're getting there. We really are, guys. While Shelley's coming up, let me say to all of you that the job that Shelley has done over the last few years in handling a very difficult job has convinced me that it's time for her to become a member of the diplomatic corps. And I also believe that Shelley has managed to do a very hard job with the kind of kindness and caring that even when she's yelling at you makes you feel as though she's your friend. That's the kind of person who ought to be our credentials committee chair, and it's with great pleasure that I recognize Shelley Foley to present her first credentials report.
Okay. Oh, hello. Thank you, Mr. President. I don't know about the rest of you. I know it's a long evening, but I'm very energized by it. This is great. Let me get organized here. Actually, I'd like to start out my preliminary report by thanking all of you affiliates who continue to get your dues and your membership updated membership lists on time, because it really makes our job a lot easier. Then I'd like to also thank the members on the committee, on the credentials committee this year, who are Sue Amater from Washington, Judy Cannon from Massachusetts, Steve Dresser from Connecticut, Patsy Jones, South Carolina, Gary LeGates from Maryland, and Cynthia Towers, our secretary, from Washington. The credentials committee, I had a meeting, had a telephone conference to review the reports that came out to us. I am very, very excited that so many people did get everything in on time. And this year is last year. What we will be doing is giving you the vote count as we do the roll call. If anybody has objection to the vote, or if there is an issue, and we have met and discussed this with people ahead of time, but we would ask that if you want to appeal the vote given to you or suggested by the credentials committee, that you let us know that tonight, and then we will take that up in the morning before we do the final report of the credentials committee, before we approve it, yeah. Okay. And so basically that's my report.
Super. Well done, Michelle.
I never have to bow to Michael.
Mm-hmm. No, see? but I did lower it for Shelley.
Way down.
She said she refused to bow to the microphone, so she actually even raised it, which is saying something. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I say for the first time, and I wish it were true, that it was the last time, Madam Secretary, are you ready to call the roll?
Yes, Mr. President.
Woo!
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, as I call the roll, will you please give me the name of your delegate, the name of your alternate delegate, the name of the person going to the nominating committee, and the number of chairs that you will need. Without further ado, Alabama Council of the Blind, 10 votes.
Van Fulgham, delegate. Berna Speck, alternate delegate. Joan Ridgway to the nominating committee. And we will need about 15 chairs. And I have a check for $1,000 for the scholarship fund.
All right. Thank you. Alaska Independent Blind, 20 votes.
I will be the delegate.
Who is I?
Oh, Lynn Corral. Lynn Corral will be the delegate. Deborah Jenkins will be the alternate delegate. And Sandy Sanderson will be the nominating delegate to the nominating committee.
And chairs?
We will need 12 chairs.
All right. Thank you. Arizona Council of the Blind, 6 votes.
Tom Belshun will be the delegate. Edward Druding will be the alternate. Ruth Druding, nominating committee. And we'll need 9 chairs.
Thank you. Arkansas Council of the Blind, 7 votes.
Arkansas Council of the Blind, delegate Michael Triplett, alternate delegate Dick Seifert, Michael Triplett attending nominating committee, and we will need 20 chairs.
Thank you. California Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Catherine Skivers will be delegate. Jeff Tom will be alternate delegate. Catherine Skivers will be a nominating. And as for chairs, I'm not certain. Californians aren't good about telling you where they're going. I'm going to ask for 50. If there are more, they'll sit on laps. If there's less, we'll carry them out.
Okay. ACB of Colorado, 6 votes.
Rod Chard will be the delegate. Karen Woodford, the alternate. Rod Chard will be the representative to the nominating committee, and we need 16 chairs.
Thank you. Connecticut Council of the Blind, 2 votes.
Ellen Telker, T as in Tom, E-L-K-E-R, will be the delegate. Marcia Dresser will be the alternate. Ellen Telker will be nominating. And I don't know exactly, but I'll say 8 chairs.
All right. D.C. Council of the Blind, 2 votes.
Okay, this is Janice Peterson, and I would first like to say that I don't want to chase Shelley, so I'm going to say we are going to appeal our 2. And our delegate is Jeanette Girard, a life member. Our alternate is Sandra Sermons. We'd like 7 chairs, please. And the nominating committee delegate is Sandra Sermons.
Thank you. Delaware Council of the Blind, 1 vote.
Our delegate will be Lynn Schneider. Our alternate will be Beverly Weiland. Lynn Schneider will serve on the nominating committee, and we will need 8 chairs. Thank you.
Florida Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Florida Council of the Blind, Delegate Jesus Garcia, Alternate Delegate James Worth, Nominating Committee James Worth, and we will need 50 chairs.
Okay. Georgia Council of the Blind, 11 votes. Georgia. Is someone here from Georgia? Okay, what I'm going to do, I heard from the audience there's somebody here from Georgia, but they don't want to give the information at this time, so I'm going to move on when you have that come up to me. Aloha Council of the Blind. That'll be another one. Hawaii Association of the Blind, 2 votes.
Hawaii Association of the Blind, Donald Thompson will be the delegate. Warren Toyama will be alternate. Donald Thompson will serve on nomination, and we need 3 chairs.
Thank you. Idaho Council of the Blind. Illinois Council of the Blind, 10 votes.
I'm MJ Schmidt, and I'm the official delegate. My alternate is Keith Wessel, W-E-S-S-E-L, and Brash will go to the nominating committee.
And chairs?
42. Woo.
ACB of Indiana, 9 votes.
ACB of Indiana, Delegate Dolly Souter, Alternate Delegate Earlene Hughes, Nominating Committee Dolly Souter. We need 20 chairs.
Thank you. Iowa Council of the United Blind, 8 votes.
Good evening, Madam Secretary.
Good evening.
Donna Seliger will be the delegate. Michael Barber will be the alternate delegate. Michael Barber will sit on a nominating committee, and we'd like 15 chairs, please.
Thank you. Kansas Association of the Blind and Visually Impaired, 11 votes.
Madam Secretary, Sanford Alexander will be the delegate. Robert Chaffin, C-H-A-F-F-I-N, will be the alternate. Sanford Alexander to the nominating committee. And I need 15 seats, please.
Thank you. Kentucky Council of the Blind, 12 votes. Now I know someone's here from Kentucky. Oh, go ahead and holler. I'll repeat. Oh, okay. The mic's coming. Oh, no, you're going to the mic. Okay.
Kentucky Council of the Blind, Eugene Willis will be the official delegate. I have 2 alternate delegates. They will be delegate number 1 will be Peggy Peake. Delegate number 2 will be Jim Shaw. And our ACB lifetime member, Ms. Carla Rushville, will go to the nominating committee. We need 25 chairs.
Thank you. Bluegrass Council of the Blind, 3 votes. Is there someone here from Bluegrass? Yes, no. Louisiana Council of the Blind, 3 votes.
Mic's too high.
Oh. Sorry.
Louisiana, I'm Paula Marshall, and I will be the delegate. Grady Ebert will be our alternate. Dan Marshall, our new president, will be the delegate to the nominating committee, and we think we need about 15 chairs.
Thank you. ACB of Maine, 3 votes. Is anyone here from ACB of Maine? ACB of Maryland, 4 votes. Maryland?
Hi. Al Pietrulungo will be the delegate, Ralph Sanders the alternate delegate, Patrick Sheehan on the nominating committee, and 24 chairs, please.
Thank you. Bay State Council of the Blind, 14 votes.
Bay State Council of the Blind, I'm Judy Cannon, will serve as the delegate, and that's J-U-D-I, Al Gazagian, G-A-Y-Z-A-G-I-A-N, will serve as an alternate. I will serve on the nominating committee. Again, Judy Cannon, we need 25 chairs.
Thank you, Judy. Michigan Council of the Blind, 6 votes. Michigan. ACB of Minnesota, 3 votes.
The delegate will be Walter Warenka. The alternate will be Stephanie Hall. For the nominating committee will be Walter Warenka. And we request 15 chairs, please.
Thank you. Mississippi Council of the Blind, 8 votes.
Mississippi Council of the Blind, delegate is Mike Duke. Alternate delegate, Michael Smitherman. Nominating committee member, Ralph Smitherman. We need 32 chairs.
Thank you. Missouri Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Chip Haley will be our delegate. That's C-H-I-P-H-A-I-L-E-Y. Edna Freeman is the alternate delegate. And the delegate to the nominating committee is Edna Freeman, and we'll need 75 chairs.
Okay. Nobody's left in the state. They're all here. ACB of Nebraska, 2 votes.
You know, that gives meaning to the term show me state.
That's right.
Very quickly, the delegate will be myself, Jim Yurak, J-I-R-A-K. The alternate, Don Pullman, P-O-H-L-M-A-N-N. Nominating committee, I won't spell it, he was on the board, Steve Spiker. I was going to ask for 10 chairs, but we found out last night in Catholic Mass we need 2 more, so it pays to go to church. In more ways than one, give us 12 seats.
All right, thank you. Nevada Council of the Blind, 5 votes.
Nevada Council of the Blind, delegate will be Edwin Newell, N-E-W-E-L-L. Alternate delegate, Gene Payton, that's J-E-A-N-P-E-Y-T-O-N. Gene will also be the nominating committee delegate, and we need 5 chairs.
Thank you. New Jersey Council of the Blind, 5 votes.
Madam Chairman, the delegate for New Jersey Council of the Blind will be Ward Biondi. The alternate will be Richard Agnew. The nominating committee person will be Gene Agnew, and we'll need 6 chairs.
Thank you. ACB of New York, Inc., 10 votes.
ACB of New York will have Lori Sharp as delegate, Gene Mann as alternate, and Gene Mann to nominating committee, and we need probably 35 chairs.
All right. Thank you. North Carolina Council of the Blind, 8 votes. Is someone here from North Carolina?
I am.
Oh, okay. Do you have the information?
No.
No? Okay, I'm going to move on. When you get that, let me know. North Dakota Association of the Blind, 7 votes. North Dakota? I'm going to move on. ACB of Ohio, 11 votes. Is someone here from Ohio? Goodness. Think I'll go home. Oklahoma Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Marilyn Sanders, the delegate. Judy Poole Hansen, alternate delegate. Judy Poole Hansen, nominating committee. And we'd like 25 chairs, please.
Thank you. Oregon Council of the Blind, 10 votes.
John Fleming, delegate. Bev Rushing, alternate delegate. John Fleming, nominating. And we need 19 chairs.
Thank you. Pennsylvania Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Well, Madam Secretary, Joe Perry will be our delegate. Our alternate delegate will be Leroy Price, and our nominating person will be Jay Dowdner, and we'll need 55 chairs.
All right. Rhode Island Regional Council. Did I hear someone requesting the mic?
Yes, Madam Secretary, I'm here from Ohio.
All right.
Mary Jo Chisnell, am the delegate. Alternate delegate is Ron Fries, and Arlene Cohn will be the person attending the nominating committee. And I don't know how many chairs we need. I'm going to say 25.
Okay, thank you. ACB of South Carolina, 2 votes.
South Carolina, Patsy Jones, delegate. Betty Jones, alternate.
Patsy Jones to the nominating committee. We need 15 chairs.
Thank you. South Dakota Association of the Blind, 8 votes.
Madam Chairman, South Dakota has a small representation here again this year. I will be serving as delegate, alternate, and representative to the nominating committee. But I understand we do have another member here from South Dakota, so we will need 2 chairs.
Okay. Tennessee Council of the Blind, 8 votes.
Madam Secretary, delegate will be Hattie Bond. An alternate delegate will be Dot Taylor from Memphis, the home of Mr. Leggett. Nominating committee is Hattie Bond, and we need 20 chairs.
Thank you. ACB of Texas, 16 votes.
Yeah. Ed Bradley will be the delegate. Ed Guerra, the alternate delegate. Bob Bartlett is a delegate to the nominating committee. We need about 25 chairs.
Thank you. Utah Council of the Blind, 25 votes.
Linda Braithwaite, delegate. Cindy Vega, VEGA, alternate delegate. Christine Hutchinson, delegate to the nominating committee. We will need 30 chairs.
Thank you. Vermont Council of the Blind, 2 votes. Is someone here from Vermont?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, Madam Chair. Tom Frank, I will be the... On the nominating committee, I will be the delegate. The alternate will be Carol Richmond, and we need 4 chairs for Vermont.
And who's going to nominating?
I am, Tom Frank.
Okay, and 4 chairs.
4 chairs. Sorry.
Thank you very much. Old Dominion Council of the Blind, 5 votes.
Good evening. This is from Virginia, home of the Blue Ridge Mountains and the beautiful Atlantic Ocean. And I'm Dennis Helms. I'll be the delegate. Mr. Robert Burke will be alternate delegate, and Linda Brody Myers will be the nominating committee representative. And, you know, I forgot to count because I was too busy losing money today, but I think we need about 40 chairs.
Okay. Losing money? Oh, okay. Virginia Association of the Blind, 24 votes.
I'm Jesse Oles, Jr. I'll be the delegate, alternate delegate, Mary McCann, to the nominating committee, Nelson Malbone. And we need 40 chairs.
Thank you. My favorite, Washington Council of the Blind, 9 votes.
Burl Colley, delegate, Marlena Laberg, L-I-E-B-E-R-G, alternate delegate, Burl Colley at the meeting tomorrow night, and Madam Secretary, we're pleased to ask for 30 chairs.
Okay. She'd have been 31 if I was down there. Thank you, honey. Mountain State Council, now you messed me up. Mountain State Council. Badger Association of the Blind, 24 votes.
Having recovered somewhat from the shock of becoming a lifetime member, I, Adrian DeBlay, who knows well the rough edges on Dr. Keith, having been his algebra and geometry teacher when he was a boy.
Oh, no.
I, Adrian, will be the official delegate. The alternate delegate will be Nona Graves. That's like in the cemetery. And I will be the... member of the nominating
That's
committee.
Pleasant.
Thank you.
How many chairs?
Oh, this will be a little bit optimistic, perhaps, but let's say 25.
Okay, or tombstones or whatever it was. Wyoming Council of the Blind, 2 votes. Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, 4 votes.
Teddy Rimhild, I will be the delegate. Bill Lewis will be the alternate delegate. And I will be the delegate to the nominating committee. Thank you.
Chairs?
Oh, 8 chairs, please.
Thank you. ACB Government Employees, 2 votes.
Mitch Pomerantz will be the delegate,
Alternate delegate will be Sharon Kiran, and Sharon Kiran will attend the nominating committee, and we will sit with our state delegations. Thank you.
Thank you. ACB Radio Amateurs, 3 votes.
Hey, I'm coming. ACB Radio Amateurs, Walter Siren, delegate. Rob Rogers, alternate. And Mike Duke, nominating committee. We, too, will sit with our state affiliates.
Thank you. American Blind Lawyers Association, 3 votes.
American Blind Lawyers Association to the convention sends a delegate of Steve Spiker. The alternate is James Bayman. Nominating committee delegate is Sean Barrett. We'd like 3 chairs, please, as a place to rendezvous, because most of us will also be sitting with our state delegations. The delegate will be in Nebraska.
Thank you. American Council of Blind Lions, 12 votes.
Madam Secretary, Alan Beatty here. Our delegate will be Ruth Baer, B-A-E-H-R. Alternate delegate, George Baer. Same spelling.
That's good.
Nominating committee will be Alan Beatty.
Chairs?
3.
Okay. Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays, 1 vote.
Fleet Flag will need, I guess we'll have the delegate will be Rob Hill. Alternate Connie David. Nominating committee Rob Hill. And we'd like to have 10 chairs.
Thank you. Braille Revival League, 17 votes.
Madam Secretary, this is Chris Gray, president of the Braille Revival League. I will be the delegate. Ninette Legates will be the alternate delegate. And I will represent BRL on the nominating committee tomorrow. We'd like to request 5 chairs for the delegation.
Thank you. Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, 25 votes.
Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, Coletta Davis, delegate. Patricia Beatty, alternate delegate. Janice Stanger to the nominating committee, and we need 25 chairs. And this mic is so high, I have to stand tippy-toes.
Council of Families with Visual Impairment, 4 votes.
Roy Ward, chair, delegate. At the moment, we don't have an alternate because the one we had hoped to use has already been committed to another assignment, so I hope we will have the opportunity overnight to find an alternate. And I will also be the nominating committee representative.
Okay. You can find Mr. Graves and dig up another one.
Whoa.
How many chairs?
We needed so many, I forgot about it. 3.
Okay. Friends in Art of ACB, 2 votes.
Friends in Art, advancing the activities of vision-impaired audiences and artists, as does our delegate, Gloria Broderick, our alternate, Michael Byington, to the nominating committee, Gloria Broderick, and we'll take 6 chairs.
Thank you. Guide Dog Users Incorporated, 25 votes.
Wow, that is a very high microphone. I need my dog to help me reach it. This is Janine Stanley, Madam Secretary, and this year we actually know who our people are.
All right.
For our delegates, Deanna Noriega, that's D-E-A-N-N-A-N-O-R-I-E-G-A. Our alternate is Margie Donovan, and the representative to the nominating committee is Liz Garner, G-A-R-N-E-R, and we will need 15 chairs.
Thank you. Independent Visually Impaired Enterprisers, 3 votes.
Madam Chairman, this is Carla Hayes, President of Ivy. We are on our own, but not alone. And I will serve as the delegate. Unfortunately, we are having trouble locating an alternate, so we'll get back to you on that one. Mm-hmm. I guess they're too much on their own. And for our representative to the nominating committee, we will have the life member, Jeanette Gerard. Thank you.
And chairs?
Oh, that's right, chairs. We need 10 chairs.
Thank you. Library Users of America, 5 votes. She's going to get to a mic, and it'll probably be tall for her.
Madam President?
Yes.
No, that's not
Winifred.
Madam, this is George Ellinger from Michigan. It appears that nobody is here from Michigan that is to give the report, but our delegate is going to be Faith Meadows. Our alternate is George Ellingworth, and the nominating committee is Lucy Edwards, and I think we'll need 24 chairs.
Thank you.
Okay, for the Library Users of America, Winifred Downing will be the delegate. The alternate will be John Taylor, and on the serving on the nominating committee will be Sue Amater.
Chairs?
Pardon me?
How many chairs?
Oh, we sit with our states.
Thank you. National Alliance of Blind Students, 2 votes. Is someone here representing the students?
Yes, okay. Madam Secretary. April Schinholster will be the delegate. S-H-I-N-H-O-L-S-T-E-R. Eric Bridges will be the alternate. And April Schinholster will also be on the nominating committee. And we would like 3 love seats. Or 7 chairs.
Okay.
Whichever you prefer.
National Association of Blind Teachers, 2 votes.
I think our work is cut out for us. Our delegate is Linda Oliva, O-L-I-V-A. Alternate, Gilly Presley. Delegate to the nominating committee, Patty Slavy. And we'd like 5 chairs.
Thank you. Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of America, 23 votes.
Artis Bazin will be the delegate. The alternate delegate will be Kim Venable. And the person for the nominating committee will be Artis Bazin. And just 5 chairs, because quite a few sit with their delegates. Thank you.
Thanks, Artis. Visually Impaired Data Processors International, 2 votes.
Ray Campbell.
Ray Campbell will serve as the delegate. Tom Lutz of Kentucky will serve as the alternate delegate. And Frank Welty will serve in the nominating committee. We will take 3 chairs.
Thank you. Visually Impaired Veterans of America, 1 vote.
David Dallin, delegate, Bill Burris, alternate delegate, and David Dallin on nominating, and we would like 10 chairs, please.
Thank you. Mr. President, that completes the roll.
Madam Secretary.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you got the report from the Georgia delegation.
Well, you know what? I'll take it now. Let me go back.
Madam Secretary, the delegate from Maine.
Wait a minute now.
Hold on. Georgia,
Georgia got in there first.
Okay.
G comes before M anyway. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. The delegate for Georgia will be Jack Lewis, the alternate Marcia Farrell, and the representative of the nominating committee will be Sandy Thomas, and we need 20 chairs.
20 chairs. Okay. Now, the gentleman, please.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Secretary. I apologize for not being here earlier. I was on a mission to let Jose Feliciano know we were having a convention here, and he was right next door. But Brian Higgins for delegate from Maine, alternate Ginger Susie, would like 5 chairs.
Who's nominating? Who's going to nominate?
I'm sorry?
Who is your representative to the nominating committee?
Brian Higgins.
Thank you.
Number of chairs?
5. Madam Secretary?
Yes.
This is Terry Hepler with the Virginia Association of the Blind.
Okay.
We're going to dispute our count.
Okay. Shelley, did you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I can hear
you. Okay. We have that down.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. President, I think I'm finished now.
Yeah. This one's taped, so you're going to have to get up and use it.
Madam Chair, this is Teddy Remhill from Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss. I don't know that I want to dispute it, but I was under the impression that we had 5 votes, so I'd like, can I ask for an explanation?
How many members do you have?
113. Well, right now we have 127.
How many members did you send in dues for?
113.
Okay. If you would, because there are a couple here that we're going to need to meet with. So if I could have maybe those of you who have questions about that meet. And Besh, are you in the room yet? If you can, when we're done here, if you can just meet up front with us just for a minute so we can clarify those counts. We went by the number that we were given in the report, and to the best of my knowledge, those were correct, but we can go through and make sure that that is correct. So if you can meet up front with us, I'll try to find all of you. I think there's two or three people that have questions. So.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank those of you who remain to the bitter end for your patience. I'd also like to say that while tonight took an awfully long time, I think we had an opportunity to see a microcosm of what the American Council of the Blind is like, and got an opportunity as well to effectively recognize many people whose contributions have been tremendous to this organization. Without further ado, however, I declare us in recess.
And I think if
this is
let's just go back to this.
Come to the front for just a moment.
Okay, it appears that we indeed have gone into recess, and thank you for sticking with us through this slightly longer than anticipated first session. Let me just tell you that if you are interested in programming information for the coming week, you can go to www.acbradio.org and take a look at our convention page, or go directly to the vast amount of information about the convention on the acb.org site. But let's briefly run over what is happening tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll be here with entertainment. Tomorrow it's coming from Leslie Stevens on keyboard and vocals. The invocation is coming from Howard Cook, a graduate of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and also a member of the Chevrolet Lions Club, I hope I pronounced that right, of Louisville, Kentucky. Now, the presiding officer tomorrow morning is going to be Cynthia Towers, the ACB Secretary of Seattle, Washington, who you heard calling the roll. At 8:30, the final credentials report will be reported. Of course, there's a couple of disputes there, so those will be clarified overnight. Partnership with decision makers and service providers is what we're looking at tomorrow, and also at 9 o'clock, we look at partnership and the consumers. Now, that's to do with Congress and partnering with Congress, and we'll hear from Congresswoman Ann Northup of the 3rd District, introduced by one of our Louisville members. At 9:30, partnerships created for the education of blind children, with Dr. Ralph E. Bartley presenting that. He's the superintendent of the Kentucky School for the Blind here in Louisville. At 10 o'clock, our continued partnership with DVS. We'll have a break at 10:15. At 10:30, we're back with consumer partnership and service and production models with Tuck Tinsley. He's the president of the American Printing House for the Blind here in Louisville. At 10:50, reflections from a narrator. And that's from Carol Gordon Stewart, recording studio director of the American Printing House for the Blind, again here in Louisville, of course. 11:30, update from the National Association for the Parents of the Visually Impaired, and that's with Susan LaVenture, director, Watertown, Massachusetts. At 11:45, we have a presentation on sports, and with Oral Miller and others, and we'll have a closure with announcements, etc., just before midday, so lots to come back and listen to tomorrow. Join us at around about 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, Eastern. See you then. Thanks for joining us.